You can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player or the LBC app where you can pause and rewind live radio. That's the LBC app. Download it for free from your app store now. At one on LBC, it's Sheila Fogarty. But right now, he's been charging all morning waiting for this. It's Ian Dale.
Thank you very much, Henry. Well, the European Court of Human Rights is asking the British government why it made Shamima Begum stateless with a clear intention of finding against the decision. Surely this sort of decision should be made by us without any interference. But having said that, should she be repatriated to face a British court? At 11, as M&S launch a range of ready meals aimed at people on weight loss jabs, that's me, how are they working for you? And what side effects have you experienced? At 12, as Veganuary begins, are you taking part, or do you agree with my view that the popularity of veganism is on the wane? And if it is, why? Could it be that people have come to realise that a balanced diet is the best way forward for everyone?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, several dozen people are presumed dead after a major fire in a bar at a popular ski resort. Swiss police say more than 100 people were also injured in the Constellation Bar in Crom, Montana. LBC's Fraser Knight says it happened just after 1:30 a.m. local time.
As people were inside this bar in Crom, Montana, called the Constellation Bar, celebrating the new year, we're told more than 100 people were inside when there were reports of an explosion and then a fire that tore through that venue. We're seeing images this morning of a huge emergency response there. It is a very popular ski resort, 25 miles north of the Matterhorn, very popular with tourists from all over the world, including here in the UK.
Authorities say several different nationalities were involved and they do not think it was terror-related. In his New Year message, the Prime Minister has said he will work to defeat decline and division. Sir Keir Starmer has said he knows life is still harder than it should be for many people across the country. Labour commentator Paul Richards has told LBC he was impressed by Sir Keir's speech.
The tone is just right, and it's all about tone. Nobody really remembers the words, but how they feel is important. And if he just rocked up and said, oh, everything's marvellous, it's all going terribly well, you know, carry on, it would have been exactly the wrong tone. So for him to come in and say, look, things are pretty rough, I think is the right thing. But he then introduced an element of hope, which is what this whole government strategy is based on. Tough decisions now with payoff down the line.
Millions around the world have been celebrating the new year with 100,000 on the banks of the River Thames. London's Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan says the celebrations in the capital are the greatest in the world. Anthony Joshua has been discharged from hospital after he was involved in a car crash in Nigeria. The former world heavyweight boxing champion is said to have made a miracle recovery as two of his close friends died in the accident. People here have been laying flowers outside the gym he owns in North London. And marching bands, cheerleaders and acrobats will take part at a celebration in London to mark the new year later. There are lots of road closures as the annual parade takes place across the West End. LBC weather, a really cold and frosty start to the year with some snow and ice in northern parts. Staying dry and sunny elsewhere though with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning and happy New Year's Day. It's 3 minutes past 10 on LBC. Welcome to the programme. It's Ian Dale here with you until one. It's my penultimate day sitting in for James O'Brien. I've really enjoyed it so far, so let's hope we have another good programme today. Now, I want to start off by talking about the vexed subject of Shamima Begum, who has been the subject of, I would say, probably several hundred phone-ins on LBC since she went to Syria as a 15-year-old in 2015. Now, many of you will remember that in 2019, the then Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, he withdrew her British citizenship, which caused quite a furore at the time. His logic was that, well, she had Bangladeshi citizenship as well, so she wasn't being made stateless. Well, Bangladesh denied that, and she is in effect stateless at the moment. So the argument has gone, well, should a British government really do this? And do they not have a duty to somebody who has had been for all of her life a British citizen? And she should come back to this country to face British courts. Now, that is where the situation was until yesterday, when the European Court of Human Rights decided to intervene, which I found quite perplexing in some ways, because why haven't they done it before? If they had a problem with this decision, why didn't they question it in the 6 years that have passed since 2019? So they have essentially sent the current Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, a series of questions which they want her to answer. Now, it seems to me that the reason they're doing this is because they intend to launch a full inquiry into this decision by the UK government with the intention of finding against the UK government. Now, why would they do that? Because it seems very strange timing when you have a big debate in this country about whether Britain should continue as members of the European Court of Human Rights. We can all have our views on whether it would be right to withdraw from that. I've always taken the view that we shouldn't. But I must admit, I don't really see what this inquiry, well, what this whole issue has got to do with a court which hasn't intervened on it before. So, two questions. Should the ECHR have a right to intervene on something like this? Do you think it will fuel those who believe that we should withdraw from it? And second of all, Shamima Begum's position herself. I mean, she's now, I think, 26 years old. She is languishing in a refugee camp in Syria with really no hope of ever leaving it, I guess, because she can't go anywhere. Now, I used to take the view, I mean, I have done a complete 180 degrees on this. I used to think, good riddance, we don't want people like her in this country, and she's got to live by her decisions. But she was 15 when she went to Syria, and there are accusations that she was effectively groomed or trafficked to Syria. Well, she was effectively still a child at the age of 15. Is it right that we just wash our hands of her in these circumstances? Now, what she did was appalling. She married a terrorist. She had three children by this terrorist, none of whom survived. Effectively, she was supporting ISIS, an organisation which wants to effectively see the destruction of the West. So I can't defend her in any shape or form, and nor am I going to. But I do believe that the decision to withdraw citizenship from her was wrong in retrospect. So you may well be able to find evidence of me saying the direct opposite at the time, but having thought about it, I've changed my mind on it. Now, I think that's the strength when you can change your mind, things when you're convinced of a case, and okay, maybe I should have been convinced of it a lot earlier, but I have changed my mind. I wonder if you have too. Do you think that she should come back to this country, not to be lead a free, normal life, but to face British courts? But the problem is, you see, when I say that she should face British courts, the likelihood is that human rights lawyers would say, well, there's no evidence against her. The prosecution has to provide evidence that she voluntarily went to Syria, that she actually overtly supported ISIS, and she took actions which could be described as aiding terrorism. I think that may well be quite a difficult case to prove. 0345 6060 973. Matthew Holbert is a political commentator and joins me now. Matthew, you've always been very robust on human rights, but why do you think it is here that the ECHR has decided to intervene after 6 years? Because presumably they could have done at the time, but chose not to.
Well, morning, Ian, and Happy New Year to you and, of course, to your listeners. Yeah, I mean, this is a difficult place, isn't it? I mean, I think many people would think that they don't have much sympathy for this person. But I guess my rhetorical question would be, you know, is it only human rights for people we have sympathy with? I mean, that clearly can't be the case. They are either universal and for everyone, or they're not. And you spelled out a number of the facts of the case there. You know, she was 15. She was a child when she went to Syria. It is being alleged that she was human trafficked to get there. And just one point, and I hope this isn't dancing on the head of opinion, but just one point there. You know, you said she married this terrorist. I mean, people would argue she was married. People would argue that at that age, you can't make a decision to get married. So I think there are a number of points here which make it really difficult to suggest anything other than that she should be able to come back home. And then, as you quite rightly say, face the courts and our legal system here.
You very deftly avoided the question that I asked, though, as to why the ECHR is doing this now rather than 6 years ago. We have to also remember that that decision was made by the then Home Secretary, the Conservative Sajid Javid. Shabana Mahmood, the current Home Secretary, is a Labour Home Secretary, but she her people have made clear that she will, quotes, robustly defend the decision to strip Shamima Begum of her British citizenship. So this doesn't seem to be a matter of political controversy between a Conservative and a Labour Home Secretary. But I come back to that question because I don't know the answer to this as to why the ECHR is intervening now and why they didn't 6 years ago.
Well, from what I gather, the reason for that is that, you know, they began this case after the Supreme Court decided that she couldn't apply back for her citizenship. So I guess that would be the answer to why they're doing it.
But that was quite some time ago as well, wasn't it?
Well, it was. And so, I mean, you know, I don't know. You'd have to ask them. But apparently they've been putting this case together since then. I mean, you know, I think it's really difficult, isn't it, for us as citizens and for politicians to, you know, be able to kind of go into bat for this person, given, you know, the public controversy surrounding her. And I fully understand that. But equally, I think that, you know, Shabana Mahmood has to follow the law. And, you know, you can't just make someone stateless. You can't.
Do you not think, though, that by doing this, the ECHR is playing into the hands of those who would like Britain to withdraw from the European Convention on Human Rights? I mean, this is going to be manna from heaven for Nigel Farage, for Kemi Badenoch, Chris Philp, etc. They're going to see this as total justification for their policy of wanting to come out of the ECHR.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And for those of us who, you know, who fundamentally believe in human rights and them being universal, you know, cases like this are difficult, aren't they? But that's precisely the point, isn't it? That, you know, we have human rights because they are undeniable. They are for every human being, however much we may not particularly like them or what they've done. Otherwise, human rights are for none of us, Ian. And that's the point, surely.
Matthew, thank you very much indeed. Happy New Year. That's Matthew Holbert, the political commentator. Daniel Johnson joins me now, editor of The Article. Daniel, very good morning to you. Now, I think you take a different point of view. You think that Sajid Javid was absolutely right to withdraw her citizenship. But what do you make of this decision to intervene by the ECHR?
Good morning, Ian, and Happy New Year to all the listeners. I absolutely do think Sajid Javid was right, and I think Shabana Mahmood is right also to defend that decision. I mean, the question is, surely, why does the ECHR think it has the power to overrule all the British courts, including the Supreme Court, as well as the government of the day? In fact, both, as you rightly pointed out, Conservative and Labour governments. In the name of what?
In the name of human rights, I suppose.
Well, a sort of abstract notion of human rights. Yes, but human rights are meaningless unless they are concrete and applied to particular situations. And it seems to me that to reverse that decision now would set a terrible precedent, and it would entitle every terrorist, every person who denies British values, who wishes to damage or destroy the British state, the right to come and live here. And this is something that I think the overwhelming majority of the country reject.
Well, I think isn't this a slightly different case, though? I mean, I would totally agree with you that anybody who comes to this country and is awarded British citizenship, if it turns out that they're wrong'uns, in effect, and they commit criminal offences, which she clearly has, then fine, then I think British citizenship would be withdrawn. But that wasn't the case here. She was born in this country, she had a British passport, she was a British citizen, and I think part of the justification at the time was, well, she's also a Bangladeshi citizen, so we're not making her stateless. Well, it turned out that wasn't true. So I think that's the crux of this matter, in that the British government made someone stateless.
I guess that is true, but I don't think that is a reason for unpicking all the extremely complex legal argumentation that went on when this case went through the courts, and just simply, cutting the Gordian knot with a very simplistic idea of human rights overriding the equally important rights of the British people and their elected representatives. I mean, what the ECHR is saying is that it alone, on the basis of its academic arguments, can set aside our entire legal system. This is a system that is much older than the ECHR. You know, it's thousands of years old, and we're very proud of it. You know, the ECHR derives a lot of its jurisprudence, I think, from this country.
Well, I think that's true.
I really don't think that it has any business interfering in this. You pointed out that, you know, they've come into the story very late in the day. I understand that she and her lawyers will want to make that case at the ECHR, but I think that Shabana Mahmood, the elected Home Secretary, is absolutely right to stand firm.
What do you make of the timing of this intervention from the ECHR? Because it does seem a little strange that it comes 6 years after the initial decision was made. It comes, I think, well, at least 12 months, if not more, after the Supreme Court decision. Why are they doing this now? Because they must know that it's an active debate in this country as to whether this country should continue to be a member of the European Convention on Human Rights. And it's just going to add fuel to the fire to that particular debate, isn't it?
It is. And I'm afraid to say that they are losing that argument. I think it's very significant that not just the leader of a rather extreme party, Nigel Farage, wishes to leave the ECHR, but actually a much more moderate and sensible Conservative, such as Kemi Badenoch and her shadow cabinet, have, after a lot of deliberation, taking a lot of expert legal advice, have decided that the time has now come for us to leave the ECHR. And I think that argument is gaining ground in the country. I think it's from the ECHR's point of view, this is a terrible decision to meddle in this way. I don't think they have a good case. But even if they did have a good case, I think most people would say, we're fine running our own human rights, thank you very much. You know, human rights are much better protected in this country than many other countries in Europe, or indeed the United States, as we're discovering with Mr. Trump. And we don't need foreign judges to tell us how to run our legal system.
Just finally, though, she's in a refugee camp in Syria, has been for many years. There is an argument, I think, that says that, well, even though the British government made her effectively stateless, we still do have a responsibility for her. Why should it be down to the Syrians to decide her future? They've got a new government. I mean, hopefully that will work. I'm not sure how it's doing at the moment. But why should they have to cope with her?
Well, that's a fair question. And I suppose the truth is that when she decided to go to fight for Islamic State, she landed, whichever country she ended up in, which, as it turns out, was Syria, with that problem. I have some sympathy with the Syrians, but I'm afraid to say by that act, she renounced her British citizenship.
But she was 15. I mean, does that not play a role here?
Yes, it does. And I think that was given due weight in the Supreme Court's decision. You know, they did weigh up all those factors, and they came to a conclusion. You know, we don't always all agree with Supreme Court decisions, but we do respect them because it is the Supreme Court. But what I think we don't want is a foreign court overruling it, in effect, and overruling the democratic elected government. So I hope that Shabana Mahmood stands firm.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us on New Year's Day. That's Daniel Johnson there, editor of The Article. Right, we'll come to your calls in a moment. There are so many different aspects to this, aren't there, that it is very difficult to be dogmatic and say, well, this is definitely right and that is definitely wrong. I suppose that's evidenced by the fact that I've changed my mind on this over the years. You have to sort of weigh up the arguments and think, well, do we still as a country have a responsibility either for or to Shamima Begum, given the fact that she was only 15 when she went to Syria? Was that a decision made of an adult mind? Well, clearly not. Was she groomed? Was she trafficked? But then again, you look on the other side and you think, well, hang on, this has been through the entire British court system, right up to the Supreme Court, and every single court has found against her. Now, you and I haven't been in court for those deliberations, so we can only operate on the basis of the facts and the views that we hear or read. So does that worry you that actually this has been considered by legal professionals and they've all come to the same conclusion? Or do you think, no, she needs to be brought back? But if she is brought back, I mean, how do you gather the evidence against her? So if you take her to court for under whichever terrorism law there is, I'm sure there'll be all sorts of different charges, but how do you prove them? 0345 6060 973. You're listening to LBC. I'm Ian Dale. It's 20 past 10.
This is LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day. And messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelled out my name in tea lights. And my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings. Next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady. Just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Music, news, celebrities, socials, entertainment, podcasts, video. The world of media and entertainment is a world we all turn to every second that we can. And university isn't for everyone. So, if you're leaving school, take a look at joining Global Academy in year 14 to take a unique course in creative enterprise and kickstart your media career. Get industry experience, develop your entrepreneurial skills, and it's free. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
23 minutes past 10, Harley says, Shamima should have always come home, regardless of her crime. Alf says, Shamima Begum, the government have made a decision on this woman. It is time the subject was finished. She actively worked against the state and ought to be left to bear the consequences. And Lee says, she wasn't effectively a child. She was a child. She wasn't effectively groomed and trafficked. Have you forgotten about the Canadian Secret Services trafficking her? Well, I haven't forgotten about that, because that's the first time I've ever heard of that allegation, which sounds rather preposterous to me, but always happy to consider new evidence, Lee. Billy is in Houston in Scotland, not in Texas. Hello, Billy.
Good morning, Ian, and Happy New Year to yourself and your listeners.
And you.
Bottom line is that I think the girl, and she was a girl at the time, was groomed. And if she had blonde hair and was called Anne or Margaret or Mary, I don't think we'd be having this conversation. She was a child, she was groomed. I don't agree with what she did. I don't think anyone can justify that. But she should not be punished for the rest of her life.
So, but given the decision was made, I mean, as I say, we can debate whether it was the correct decision, but given the decision was made 6 years ago, what, and she's now in a refugee camp in Syria, what should happen now? Because if the new Home Secretary, or I say new, she's been in post since September, so I suppose she's not new anymore, is she? But she's portrayed herself as very hard line, probably the most right-wing Labour Home Secretary, well, since Jackie Smith, or maybe even David Blunkett. She is not going to want to back down on this, is she? Because it would sort of ruin her reputation for being a toughie.
Are we talking about the Labour Party here? The yeah. Tory Party of Reform? I can't really see any difference. She has to come home. She has to come back to the UK. And when we talk about losing rights under the European Convention of Human Rights, which ones are we happy to lose? Holiday pay? Sickness pay? Freedom of speech? We're losing all that at the moment anyway.
Are we?
But we're arresting doctors and nurses
When do you feel that you've lost your freedom of speech? You can come on the radio and say anything you like.
Ah, well, can you really say what you want? Or will you have a police officer knocking at your door?
Well, I mean, I'd like to think that...
We all know that
there are limits to freedom of speech. But, I mean, if you come on here and say something racially aggravating, I'm going to shut you down. If you... absolutely.
If I hold up a banner and I say that I think what's happening with Fulton 24 is wrong, if I hold up a banner and say I support those prisoners, is that an arrestable offence?
With what prisoners?
The prisoners that are on hunger strike.
I don't think it's an offence to hold up a banner. I mean, if you say that you support Palestine Action...
I know you haven't, but if you did,
that is an arrestable offence. Now, we can, again, have a very good debate as to whether that is the correct way forward, but that's what the government have done. They passed a law to say that, and people have been in prison for it. So, yes, you can say, well, that impinges on my freedom of speech, but you can actually lobby to have that law changed.
Don't think we probably can, and I think that decision was probably based on lies, and effectively they're not telling us why they brought in that prescription.
Well, I mean, they kind of are, because they say that that group was supporting effectively a terrorist action by harming MOD property.
We're
kind of going off the subject here.
Yeah, but to commit a crime to prevent a greater crime, is that a crime?
Well, under the law, yes, it is.
Well, the law's wrong then.
Well, then,
don't vote for
political parties that implement that law then. It's quite simple. That's how a democracy works.
Is that how democracy works? I mean, we just had somebody on there talking about a court interfering with this country's courts. Are we talking about the Supreme Court interfering with the Scottish courts?
Well, the Supreme Court is the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom.
Are we talking about a democracy where 64% of the Scottish people wanted to stay within Europe and were taken out by England?
Oh, dear, we're going right off the subject here, aren't we, Billy? Come on,
back to Shemima. Should she be brought home? Yes, she should. She was a girl when she was groomed and taken to this country. And I don't think she should be languishing in a Syrian refugee camp for the rest of her life.
What happens, though, and I agree with you on that, but what happens, though, if she comes back, the government says, well, we're only going to restore her citizenship if she's found innocent in the courts. So she goes to court. Her lawyers argue that there can be no evidence submitted against her because there is no evidence. There's a lot of suppositions. There's a lot of theories about what she did. Like, people are saying, well, she sewed together suicide vests. What was the evidence for that? So if the prosecution can't produce firm evidence, she will walk free. Now, I don't think you or I or probably anyone else listening to this programme believes that she is innocent of all that she will be charged with. But without the actual evidence, you can't prove it, can you?
How long has she been in a refugee camp?
Years.
Yeah, I think that's punishment enough, possibly.
I mean, do you remember...
I'm not a hang-em-high type person. I do believe that people should be given a second chance. I do believe what she did was wrong. But I also believe that because of her colour, the colour of her skin, she was groomed, she was taken abroad, and people have different views on her. Now, would they be saying the same thing, as I said earlier, if she had blonde hair and her name was Mary?
Well, I would like to think that there wouldn't be any difference at all, but I take the point that you're trying to make, but... I mean, if she was 15 and there were court proceedings against her in this country then, she wouldn't have been named, would she?
No, she wouldn't. She would have been given protection. I just think the whole thing is wrong. The way the government's behaving, are the Labour Party behaving the same as the Tories? Probably worse than the Tories. Yeah.
Well, they're defending the decision that was made by the then Conservative Home Secretary. Now, again, I suspect here... that there are things that we don't know, that for various reasons have not been released. And I remember having a conversation, I think, on the radio with Sajid Javid about this, and it was one of those, if you knew what I knew, conversations. And I'm thinking, well, that's all very well, but I don't know what you know, and therefore you've got to defend what you've done, but you're clearly not able to give us all of the facts. And I don't know whether the courts that have found against her consistently also have access to those facts that Sajid Javid had that we don't have. So I think there is a lot more to this than meets the eye. And it may be that extra information would make me change my mind back to my original position. God, I'm going to be known as Mr. Flip-Flop soon, aren't I? Billy, thank you very much. It's 10:30 on LBC. We'll come back to more of your calls on Shamima Begum in just a moment. But first, the news headlines with Lottie Morley.
Swiss police say several dozen people are presumed dead after a fire at a ski resort bar. Officials say around 100 more were hurt when it happened in Crans-Montana in the early hours of this morning. In the past few minutes, a police officer who lost his wife and two children in a house fire in Brimscombe on Boxing Day has paid tribute to them. Tom Shearman described them as three of the greatest humans to ever grace our presence. And many people will see their energy bills rise from today. The price cap will increase by 0.2%, leading to a rise of around 28 pence a month for the average household. LBC weather, a chilly start to the year with some snow and ice in the north, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, their home instead care professional who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love, and it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
Now it's time to thank our partner for this episode, eBay.
Guys, as you know, I've just moved house and I realised we made one big mistake in the moving process.
Uh-oh.
We didn't do the clear out before packing up.
Oh, it's a schoolboy error that, Chris.
I know. But it's okay, because I'm thinking now's the perfect time to have a little bit of a declutter, because we're going into the new year. No better time to get through and find those hidden gems and give them a new home.
Yeah, too right.
Yeah, absolutely spot on, mate. I also moved on the same day as you, which is weird. And I sold so much stuff on eBay. It's made settling into the new place so much smoother. It's free and easy to sell on the eBay app, from fashion and tech to furniture and collectibles. Just snap, list, and you're done.
Look, guys, you don't have to convince me. You know I love a bit of eBay. And when I get home, I'm going to actually sort out my wardrobe and get some new bits listed on eBay.
I keep saying I'm going to sort my wardrobes out as well. I need to do that. When it's this easy to sell for free, you can't help but say when it's eBay.
Download the eBay app and start selling for free today. Excludes vehicles and business sellers.
From rusty chains to fancy frames and everything in between, sign up for British Heart Foundation's iconic London to Brighton bike ride. Because it's not your wheels, it's how you use them. Whether you're a brand new rider or seasoned pro, challenge yourself this June and make your ride matter with British Heart Foundation. And you won't need any fancy gear, just your helmet and your bike. Sign up today, search London to Brighton bike ride and keep us beating.
Ian Dale on LBC. Text 84850.
10:33, Debbie says, good morning, Dee from Leicester. Is it Dee or Debbie? I don't know. Anyway, you say she was 15, still a child and easily led, yet they want to give the vote to 16-year-olds. There is little difference. Well, that is, I think, quite a fair point to make. I mean, that is another issue where I flip-flopped on. Should we make a list of them over the next 3 hours? It'd be quite a long list, probably. Haven't flipped-flopped on Brexit, though. 16 years old is now, I think many people consider the age of majority. It always used to be 21. It then went down to 18. Now seems to be 16 on some things, but not on others. But that really is a whole different debate. Let's go to Ben in Enfield. Hello, Ben.
Hello, good morning, Ian.
Good morning.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're having this debate today of all days. New Year. I have always felt that Shemina became a prisoner of conscience 6 years ago, and I've always had her in the background thought of the judicial process of our country here that has been tinged by political intervention, really. If we're in America and the president chooses who sits on the Supreme Court, we can all tell whether they're right-wing or left-wing, know what their political leanings are. But in the UK, we don't know the makeup of the Supreme Court judges.
Yes, we do.
We do know that the Home Secretary...
Hang on a minute. You just said something that's factually wrong. We know the identity of all of the Supreme Court judges.
Yeah,
and if you want to look up their background, you're very free to do so. I mean, who they vote for, I don't think has got any relevance whatsoever to their judicial position.
Well, if it were the United States, it will be very relevant.
Yeah, I know, but we're not the United States, and I don't think they're right to have political appointments to the judiciary.
Exactly, we're not, and we can all see what is coming out of the U.S. at the moment. Thankfully, we have, and I'm glad for the ECHR, because simply we're... There have been prisoners of conscience all over the world. There have been people who have been hung in our history and to be found to be innocent later. I am not going on the Shamima thing because I felt that was wrong. I've all agreed, at least 70% of your callers have agreed that it was a wrong decision to have made. So I'm not going to... I think we ought to talk about an independent court that can oversee whatever happens in any nation.
You're kind of arguing against yourself, Ben, there, because you're holding up the United States as a bastion of...
I'm saying that as one of the largest countries that we tend to look... we don't look up to them, but we do use them as a measure of most things. We can all see what is happening there. This is the point I'm making.
Yeah, and we can check out what's happening here too, but we don't necessarily need an international court to help us do that. America isn't a member of a court like that, nor is Australia, nor is Japan, nor is Canada. Why do you think we have to be?
Yeah, but we do have a seat on the ECHR. Do we not? Do we not have a judge representing our own interests on that seat?
I'm sure we do, yeah.
Well, precisely. And so does Germany, France, and all the
other... The problem is that quite a few of the judges who sit in the European Court are not actually professional judges. A lot of them are academics, historians. Some of them aren't even legally trained.
Let's change it, if it needs to be changed. Let's participate. We can't say that we don't want to be a member of a club, rather than we can be within the club and change it. If we feel that we need more professional judges, whatever we did, but let's do that. But what I don't want is where we have decisions made solely by politicians who then influence the courts, because I am not sure we know really the makeup and who elects Supreme Court judges. Because I did know that not long ago they began to politicize it. We moved from the Chief Justice system to making a politician.
Again, you've said something completely wrong. We do know who the Supreme Court judges are. They're listed. You can look up their biographies. You can look up their backgrounds. You can look up the cases that they've heard and the decisions that they've made.
Yes, but I am still convinced that the majority of the public rely on what the Supreme Court judges say without really looking at the political aspect of it. Because if you think about our Home Secretary, they can be as right. You mentioned it. The current Home Secretary is very right wing.
But that's because we have an intrinsic trust in the judicial system.
Yeah, but you did say yourself that she's so right wing that she would not be prepared to entertain being stepped upon by any outside judge that does not agree with her views.
Well, I didn't say that, to be fair. I said that I thought she was very she portrayed Ben, can I actually try and get a little word in so I can respond to what you're saying? The fact is that she portrays herself as a very hardline Home Secretary. So politically, she would not wish to back down on this in any shape or form. But the fact is, we are members of the European Convention on Human Rights. So because of that, they have every right to intervene. I question why it's taken them 6 years to do so, but they have done so, and I think it's going to cause her a big political problem.
Well, good. I'm glad you had intervened. I wish we keep the ECHR. And yes, I do agree with you on the Shamina case anyway, but we ought to revisit that and look at it, because she has become a prisoner of conscience.
Well, there are many people who are prisoners of conscience, but generally that's because they've done things that a lot of people would consider to be right. I mean, I think the problem that Shamima Begum has is that she doesn't qualify as a prisoner of conscience. Well, in fact, she's not even a prisoner, is she? And even if she did come back to this country, how you could describe her as a prisoner of conscience, given her track record, I fail to understand. Dave's in Romford. Hello, Dave.
Good morning, Ian, and happy New Year to you.
And you, sir.
Well, let's put it to bed straight away, shall we, right? That young girl knew what she was doing when she went abroad to do what she's done.
Did she?
She had a... Well, yeah, she did
how
on her own.
How do you know that?
Okay.
You are assuming that, which is a very different thing.
Let's assume she knew exactly what she was doing. It was all planned out, it was all plotted out as she went there. And she stayed the course. She stayed the course. She got married, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. There's her status all sorted, isn't it? Her husband, who's no longer with us, I believe. Take his nationality.
Well, he was Dutch. Just because she married a Dutchman doesn't give her the right to be a Dutch citizen.
Oh, it does, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't.
If you married an American, you can take American citizen.
Yeah, you have to apply for it. It doesn't become automatic.
Well, let her apply for Dutch citizenship.
Well, why on earth would Holland, the Netherlands, give her their citizenship? They'd be mad to.
It's up to Holland, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But,
in reality,
they wouldn't give it to her, quite rightly.
And I agree.
Why should it become their problem?
So let her stay where she is. She's made her bed, let her lie in it.
Why is it the Syrian government's responsibility to look after her? Why should it be the Syrian government's responsibility when she grew up in Britain as a British citizen?
How old is she now?
26.
Right, so she's matured in Syria, put it that way.
Yeah,
right,
but probably not in a good way.
Well, regardless. Right, she's there, she's an adult person living in Syria. She had chose to have her 3 children in Syria. Sadly, she lost them all, but that's another issue. She married a Dutch guy in Syria, right? As her life is in Syria. Let her stay there. She chose that life. Let her stay. She comes back here, what's she going to be? She'll have a target on the back, to be fair. Some idiot would try to do something, wouldn't they?
Given that you are fairly certain that she's guilty of the crimes that she is alleged to have committed, I mean, if she comes back here and faces British justice, then surely that would be the best way forward, even though it would be difficult to provide actual evidence of what she did while she was in Syria.
Something you said in your... I'm not sure if the interview you just had or the one before, right? You was interviewing someone... I think it was Javid, was it? And if you knew what I knew, comment was made. You with me?
Say that again.
He was interviewing someone. I can't remember if it was the guy just gone or the guy before him. I think it was the guy before him. And he was saying about the judges politicised or things like that. And you said about Javid. You was discussing this case with him, and he sort of give you the if you knew what I knew scenario, right?
Yeah.
Now,
Which presumably, if he was called to give evidence in a court hearing against her, I mean, would he be obliged to tell a court what he knows? I mean, maybe there's... I don't know the legal system well enough to know whether they can go into some sort of secret session. But then if they do, then, of course, you'll have all the conspiracy theorists saying, this is the dark state, isn't it?
Which is why you have to be open and honest and everything has to come to the front. Yeah. And also, I'm damn sure that those judges, though they don't mention it inside the open court, but they are aware of the things that she had done. They are brought to them judges' attention.
Well, I think
would have to come down into the sentencing issue, but would not be done while the court case was going on. But they would be well aware of whatever issue she's done. Like if she was sewing suicide vests for terrorists, or you know whatever was she was doing against the armed forces that were out there.
Yeah. Well, look, that's a conclusion I've come to, and I don't think all of the different levels of the courts in this country would have found against her in the way that they have, unless there was something there that us mere mortals don't know at the moment. Maybe we will one day. Dave, thank you very much. Alan says, Begum sewed suicide bombers into vests. She has blood on her hands. What should happen is her to be tried by the Syrians, and to be frank, if she's executed as a result, so be it. Girls can get married at 13 in Syria, so she was of local age. Now, just by way of background to that, the journalist Andrew Drury, who got to know Shamima Begum, spoke to me on LBC, several years ago now, and this is what he said. I believe she has the capability of sewing suicide vests, and I don't say that easily or without a heavy heart. I think she does, and I actually believe she probably did. But that's not good enough for a court of law to actually believe that she probably did. You have to be proved guilty beyond reasonable doubt, don't you? How do you enforce that? How do you get that evidence unless there are actually photos of her doing it and witnesses who can give evidence in a court? And the case would collapse if you couldn't do that, wouldn't it? That's the problem that we have. It's 10:45.
I'm Nick Ferrari. Thank you for joining me throughout the year on LBC.
It's not a racist at all to have concerns about your children, one of whom's going to secondary school soon.
If not being a racist means my children are subject to being murdered, going about their daily business, I'll quite happily say that I am.
Is there much point continuing this conversation? Because you don't know where a bridge starts, you don't know where it ends, and you don't know how much it costs.
Nigel Farage came up and claimed you had an obsession with him.
No, that's not the case. I am deeply concerned about reform because I think they will toxically divide our country.
Mentioned Mr. Farage five times.
You are mildly obsessed.
I'll be back next week taking your calls on LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from Real Octopus Energy Calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
You stepped up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service was really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top, you know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
At Lidl, we value getting you the most out of your money. Like switching from Tesco to Lidl and saving £32 on this week's big shop. See the savings at lidl.co.uk/you save and start the new year feeling like a savvy saver. Lidl. More to value. Prices check 10th of the 12th, 25. Tesco also sell other products. See online for more details.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. New year, new plans, new deals. With up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Ian Dale on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:48 on LBC. We'll come back to your calls on Shamima Begum in just a few moments' time, but you'll have heard in the news bulletins about this terrible fire that's killed dozens of people in Switzerland. Fraser Knight is LBC's reporter, and he's here with the latest.
Yeah, Ian, what should have been an evening of celebration turned into a nightmare is what Swiss authorities have said today. A fire around 1:30 a.m. inside a bar on the Swiss ski resort Kronmontana. Now, in the past couple of hours, we have had quite a major update from the authorities saying that they believe several dozens are dead as a result of that, and around 100 or so also significantly injured. We've now heard from the Italian Foreign Ministry as well. They've said that they believe there's around 40 dead. They say that's what Swiss police have said to them. And of course, you've got nationalities from all over the world involved here. It was described as an internationally renowned ski resort. And so, you know, the Swiss authorities are speaking to governments right across the world. We have heard in the past few minutes from the Foreign Office here, who've said our thoughts are with all those injured and killed in the terrible tragedy in Kronmontana, and we pay tribute to the Swiss emergency services who are leading the response. They say we will continue to monitor the situation, and our consular staff stand ready to support any British nationals who may be affected. We understand that the Foreign Office hasn't been contacted yet with any requests for support, so we don't know as of yet whether any British tourists were involved in this fire, but the president of the State Council in Valais, the region of Switzerland where this happened, Matthias Renard, has been talking about the scale of the response that was required for this.
We have mobilised all of our means and resources over the last few hours. 10 helicopters, 40 ambulances, 150 healthcare staff members, over 100 casualties, severe injuries who have been taken to hospitals in the Valais region and other hospitals. Intensive care and the operating theatre at the hospital of the Valais are currently full. Some of the injured persons have been transferred to other university hospitals around Switzerland. Some of the casualties are currently being stabilised in intensive care and will be transferred to other university hospitals for treatment of their major burns injuries.
And after he said there that the intensive care at the local hospital was at capacity, they're having to transfer patients out, Matthias Renard went on to appeal to people not to carry out any dangerous activities in the hours that come. He said, be careful in the hours that follow. Do not add any more to this drama. We need prudence from the population, is what he said. There's still quite a lot we don't know that happened here. We don't know what started the fire. Of course, there's a huge investigation going on, and they're still working, of course, to identify the victims, the burns, injuries that many of them have, making that a really difficult process. But there's still a major kind of response there. You can see a large white cordon that's been put up outside the front of this bar in Kronmontana, a place that is very popular with tourists from all over the world.
Fraser, thank you very much. A really tragic story indeed. That's Fraser Knight, LBC's reporter, giving you the latest on this terrible tragedy in Kronmontana. Right, let's go back to your calls on Shamima Begum and the fact that the ECHR has felt that it needs to intervene. They're asking the British government four questions to justify why she was made stateless. And I suspect this is going to lead to a hearing at the ECHR. Which, of course, is going to rack up the argument as to whether Britain should withdraw from it. Dino is in Colchester. Hello, Dino.
Yeah, hi. I was disgusted by your last caller. What's wrong with these people? This girl was 15 years old. She made a mistake. She was groomed. She was used as a sex object. She lost three children. Hasn't she been punished enough? She's English, she's British, she was born and bred in this country, she'd be brought back. And anyway, the government could put a clause in for her to help going around schools and talking to young people not to be groomed. So it will benefit Britain as well. But for God's sake, ridiculous. It's disgusting. Let the girl come back.
But do you believe that if she does come back, she should be tried in the courts?
No, absolutely not.
If it is true that she was effectively sewing suicide vests for suicide bombers?
She was a young girl in a situation. What could, if they asked her if she did that, she asked her to sew, what can she say? No, she couldn't. She was in a situation.
I don't think she ever wanted to say no. If you look at the interviews that she's done, both print and broadcast, admittedly none over the last couple of years, but certainly I've seen various ones where she was given the opportunity to say how sorry she was and that she realises her mistakes, but she didn't do that at all.
Well, maybe, but still, there's no maybe about it.
I mean,
she suffered enough, and she is British.
Well, she isn't actually anymore.
Well, she should be.
Okay, Dino, thank you. Let's go to Naomi, who's in Orpington. Hello, Naomi.
Good morning. I am a little bit nervous about calling you. I think the government is right to revoke her nationality. She may have been underage when she left, but she had her third baby at the age of 19. I checked that. And at 19, you are an adult, so she was still involved with the group or members of the group after the age of 18. And everybody is an adult in the UK after the age of 18. So to say that she was underage, maybe... when she left, but she certainly wasn't when she was still involved with one of the most horrific groups in history who committed horrible crimes against individuals who'd done nothing.
Well, you're absolutely right on that. I suppose the argument, I mean, slightly playing devil's advocate here, but the argument against that would be to say, well, if she was groomed and indoctrinated with ISIS propaganda, she didn't really know her own mind, even at the age of 19. And so, therefore, she had been almost indoctrinated is the right word here, that she believed in the ISIS propaganda, and so she wasn't in a fit mental state to do anything else.
Well, if you commit murder in this case, and you're not in a fit mental state, it's still murder, I'm afraid. It's all very well for her to say she was groomed and she was indoctrinated, but I'm sorry to say that we're not dealing with an ordinary group. You do know how much these groups, how much damage and pain these groups inflicted on very innocent civilians. So I'm sorry. You can't just say, oh, because she was 15 and she was indoctrinated, that she can't accept responsibility for anything that happened afterwards, even when she was an adult. I can't accept that. If she'd sort of stopped at 15, fine, but she was with them until the age of 19, obviously, since she had one of their children.
Okay, Naomi, thank you very much. Kit's in Stanmore. Hello, Kit.
Hi, Ian. I just wanted to make a point that this whole case is incredibly confusing, but the main issue that I have with it is the dangers of social media, which was what radicalised her in the first place, because she had access to social media. She was being messaged by people who sent her nothing but positivity and encouragement to make this decision at 15, and that's what she did. And then I don't care what she... I mean, obviously now she would... Well, she may not regret or whatever. But the initial opening was social media, which is what radicalised her in the first place and caused all of this. So I think that this discussion, no matter where it goes, it needs to address the danger of social media to our children. Does that make sense, or am I just...
No, it does make sense. And had the Australian laws, current social media laws, existed in this country in 2015, she wouldn't have had access to that. So I think you actually make a very reasonable point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to add any more to this discussion. I think it's incredibly complicated. The way that I would resolve this is that I would offer her British citizenship, but on the condition that she goes to jail for X amount of years or whatever, rather than going to trial. Because as you say, if she goes to trial, you can't prove it anyway.
I don't think that's even possible to do.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, you can't send someone to jail unless they have been tried in a court of law. I mean, that really would go against... I mean, that's where the ECHR really wouldn't be.
It's an incredibly complicated situation.
No, it really is. And whenever I talk about this, I realise that we are all commentating on this from a position of not 100% knowledge. Because that phrase that Sajid Javid used, well, if you knew what I knew, that's always been in the back of my mind on this. And I can't speculate on what he knows that we don't know. But, I mean, he's not the sort of person to exaggerate it. There must be something there that has led him to make that decision. Kit, thank you very much indeed. Layla says the ECHR can only act after a long chain of domestic processes and only once a case is procedurally ready. Shamima was represented by British lawyers to challenge the decision until recently, and only now the ECHR has jurisdiction after exhaustion of British domestic procedures. Up to a point, Lord Copper, I would say, on that one. But thank you very much, Layla. Right, we're going to move on in the next hour and turn our attention to weight loss jabs, because M&S have launched a range of ready meals aimed at people on weight loss jabs. They're going to be in their food stores from Monday, the 5th of January. I am on Mounjaro myself, so I shall probably be availing myself of these ready meals, although I wonder if they are actually going to be any healthier than the others, because I've become almost sort of averse to having any ready meals because of all the preservatives and chemicals that go in them. But that's not the point of this discussion. The point of this discussion is to ask, how are weight loss jabs working for you? What are the side effects of them? And do you think that enough research has been done into the long-term effects?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Swiss police say several dozen people are presumed dead after a fire in a bar at a popular ski resort. Authorities in Crum, Montana say more than 100 were also injured as they celebrated the start of the new year. Here's the president of the state council, Matthias Renard.
Over 100 casualties, severe injuries who have been taken to hospitals in the Valais region and other hospitals. Intensive care and the operating theatre at the hospital of the Valais are currently full. Some of the injured persons have been transferred to other university hospitals around Switzerland.
The Foreign Office says it's ready to support any British nationals affected and will continue to monitor the situation. Party leaders have been delivering their messages for the new year. Prime Minister Sir Starmer says he wants to defeat decline and division in 2026. Tory leader Kemi Badenoch has shared words of optimism, saying we shouldn't lose hope. Weather warnings for snow have been upgraded in northern Scotland from midday tomorrow. Less severe warnings for snow and ice cover parts of the same area, plus Northern Ireland, most of Wales and most of England. Cold weather alerts are also in effect because of the freezing temperatures. Many households will see their energy bills rise from today. The price cap is going up by 0.2%. It means the average monthly bill across England, Wales and Scotland will go up by 28 pence. Zoran Mamdani has been sworn in as the New York City mayor. The Democrat was sworn in as the first Muslim leader of America's biggest city in a private ceremony. It was administered by the city's Attorney General, Letitia James.
The mayor of the city of New York.
The mayor of the city of New York.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Mayor.
And health visitors will be able to offer vaccinations to children from struggling families across parts of England. The £2 million government pilot aims to improve immunisation rates. Not one childhood vaccine in England met the 95% target in 2024. LBC weather, chilly to begin 2026 with snow and ice in northern parts. Dry and sunny elsewhere with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
It's the season for savings with Virgin Media. Get great deals across our smooth, lightning-fast broadband range. Plus, switching is easy. We'll handle everything for you. That's smooth broadband and smooth switching. Smooth. Like a walrus on a speedboat powering through open fjord waters. Yeah, that's smooth. Visit virginmedia.com. New customers only. Virgin Fibre areas. Restrictions and credit checks apply. Ends 4th of February. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning. 3 minutes past 11 on LBC. It's Ian Dale in for James O'Brien all this week. Let's talk about weight loss jabs, because I think they're something that quite a lot of people in this country have views on, particularly those who are actually on them or have been on them. I'm told that somewhere between 2 and 3 million people are now on weight loss jabs. Not that many prescribed through the NHS, because you have to have 4 comorbidities to have it prescribed on the NHS. But people are paying hundreds of pounds a month to ostensibly lose weight. There's even a black market now for weight loss jabs, something I find incredible, because I can't understand why anybody would be willing to pay hundreds of pounds to a complete stranger for a pen full of liquid when you haven't got any idea what's in that pen. You have no idea what it could do to you. And yet the black market, I'm told, is absolutely thriving for this. If you've got any experience of that, I'd like to hear from you over the course of the next hour. But also, I want to talk about the side effects of weight loss jabs. Now, I'm on Mounjaro. I've been on Mounjaro since September. And until recently, I've had absolutely no side effects at all. My friend, who's on it as well, started back in May, I think, and has had terrible side effects. Every day he's sick, every morning it's like he's pregnant. He suffers nausea throughout the day, chronic diarrhea. And I think that's put off a lot of people from going on these weight loss jabs. Now, until the last week or so, when I upped my dosage, or had it upped for me, from 5 to 7 milligrams, it's a weekly injection of this liquid, which is now 7.5 milligrams. And I haven't lost, I mean, I didn't do it necessarily to lose weight, though that is obviously a happy byproduct. I did it because I'm a type 2 diabetic, and I had my annual checkup with a diabetes nurse, and she said, would you like to go on Mounjaro? And I said, well, I hadn't really considered it seriously, but I said, why, do you think I need to lose a lot of weight? And I'll admit, at the time, I was probably a bit over what I normally am. And she said, well, no, I can prescribe it through the NHS for your blood sugars. It'll help you keep your blood sugars in range. And it's done wonders on that. It really has. My blood sugars are now in range somewhere around 75 to 85% of the time. Before that, it was more like 30 or 40% of the time. So it's really helped on that. Has it made me lose an awful lot of weight? I have lost some, but certainly not as much as I thought I would. But that's not my main motivation. And I did say to her, well, I'm quite happy to pay for it. She said, no, I can prescribe it on the NHS. And I said, well, I thought you had to have 4 comorbidities. And she said, well, you kind of have. I didn't actually ask her to list what they were. But then I thought, well, I've paid into the NHS all this time. Why shouldn't I get it prescribed? And as I say, it's had very few side effects on me. Apart from when I went up to 7.5, it's given me the... Yeah, that word. And... And it's the kind of thing where if you need to go, you need to go now. And that was what I was rather dreading, that I might be caught in a situation where I literally couldn't. And I know several friends of mine have had that experience, and it's probably the most embarrassing thing that they've ever experienced in their lives. Hasn't happened to me yet. But then I'm worried if I go up to the 10 milligram dose, which is when you really start, when the weight really starts to come off, then I really do worry about that. So I want to know from you what side effects you've had, if any. And are you worried about the fact that, well, these are all comparatively new, whether we're talking about Ozempic, Mounjaro, Wegovy, any of the others, they're comparatively new. So what kind of research has really been done into the long-term effects? And how many people think, well, I'm on them and I'm going to stay on them all my life because I think they're absolutely fantastic. They've done wonders for me. And yes, I might be on a high dose now, but I don't think I'll ever come off them. And how many of you are actually taking proper medical advice on this? Because it seems to me as though a lot of people are making their own decisions as to when they should go up a dose or not. And they're not actually taking professional medical advice. So I think there are a lot of people listening who will be thinking, should I be going on one of these? Because I've had anecdotal evidence that they work wonders. So why wouldn't I try it? So I think your experiences are going to be really valuable to others who are listening who might be thinking about going on one. Well, Giles Yeo joins me, Professor of Molecular Neuroendocrinology at the University of Cambridge and author of the book Why Calories Don't Count. Giles, good to talk to you again. Is there anything in my initial sort of monologue there that you would take issue with, particularly maybe on the long-term research?
No. I think you're absolutely right. First of all, Happy New Year. Thank you for having me on again.
Happy New Year to you.
No, I think I do agree with you. They're broadly safe. You've described your side effects, which is relatively common. And I would put that under the category of discomfort as opposed to danger. For that, it is the long-term, there are the long-term effects that we need to keep our eyes out on. I think from first principles, because these drugs have been around for 20 years, these class of drugs, mostly as a once daily, I think we think it's going to be broadly safe. But yeah, you're right. The more millions go on these drugs, the rarer side effects are going to begin to rear their head. We need to keep our eyes open on that.
Now, what is the position about appetite and diet? Because there are foods that are recommended for people who are on these drugs. What if you just keep on with your normal diet?
I mean, you could keep on with your normal diet. It depends how bad it was to begin with. So what these drugs do, if you're taking it for appetite perspective, then broadly speaking, it makes you feel fuller. So you eat less and you therefore end up losing weight. For a lot of people, however, it doesn't make your diet better. It doesn't improve your diet. It's not like suddenly you're going to say, I'm going to have salads. So that's just not the way it works, at least not consistently. So I do think that some people who had a particularly bad diet going on these drugs, the danger is because you eat less of a bad diet, you will lose weight because you're eating less, but then you may actually end up with specific malnutrition, right? Some of the micronutrients which you needed to have. You needed to eat this much food in order to get it. You may not be getting that. So I think it is very important to think about the diet as you're eating less to make sure that the nutrient density, making sure you're getting enough fiber and protein and vitamins, everything is still there.
In the next hour, we're going to be talking about veganism, which I think is a bit on the wane in this country. And I've always taken the view that a vegan diet is intrinsically unhealthy because you should have a balanced diet, sort of a little bit of everything rather than a lot of one thing. And that same principle can surely apply here, can't it? We're told that if you are on a weight loss drug, you should eat more often but have smaller portions. And that's the way forward. That is the best way to lose weight. Is that true?
No, I think that depends on who you are. Because there are going to be some people who are naturally grazers and other people like myself who like to eat meat. I don't snack at all, but I eat big meals. And so I think it depends who you were prior to the drug, that some people may just end up eating smaller meals. Other people will continue grazing but have smaller portions. So I think that is going to depend on who you were before you started taking the drug.
What about the advice that you should take? Because, as I said earlier, I think there are a lot of people that are deciding themselves on when they should change their regime and go up to 7.5 or 10 or even, I think, you can go up to 15 milligrams on Mounjaro. What advice should people be taking? And should people just decide for themselves?
I don't think people should decide for themselves. I mean, if you were to ask me what my biggest worry about these drugs, they're not actually the side effects. I may be proven wrong, but they're not actually the side effects. Is that so many people are doing this privately. That's the first thing, which means that they don't have the normal, unlike yourself who are getting it from the NHS, you don't have the normal coverage of the NHS, right? But you can't just go and get more up your dose without the doctor actually doing it. And so people are making their own decisions, and this is a bad idea. And I think people who are not supposed to be on these drugs, and primarily they're using it cosmetically, and these are not a cosmetic product. These are drugs. They're designed to treat someone with a disease. But people are, if you go through some unscrupulous vendors of these drugs, you're able to get them without barely seeing, you know, a healthcare professional. That's my biggest concern. My biggest concern is the wrong people getting the hand of the drug, getting hold of the drug, and then making their own sorts of random decisions about, you know, about what they could be doing on these drugs.
In terms of the long term, how do people decide when to come off it? I mean, obviously, you should consult a medical professional, I guess, but there'll be many people who think, well, OK, I've gone up, I've lost all the weight I want, but I know that I'm going to put it back on if I come off it completely. So if I stay at 2.5 or 5 milligrams, that will sort of keep me ticking over and just keep my weight stable. Now, there is a certain logic to that, but if you haven't got the professional advice, are you heading for a fall?
That's an interesting question. I don't think we know the answer. I think you should always take medical advice. I think we're not in a situation where we can answer for certain what will happen during the weight maintenance period. I think the weight loss stage, we're beginning to get an idea of how much food we need to sort of, what dosage we need to get in order to lose weight. The weight maintenance is going to be very interesting. All the companies are now trialing out options, right? They're trialing out reducing the dose, increasing the time between doses. And of course, we just have the Wegovy pill just approved just before New Year. So in other words, there's going to be oral drugs available as well. And maybe that is going to be better for you from a weight maintenance perspective.
Why would a pill be better than an injection?
Oh, just because for a couple of different reasons. A pill will always end up being cheaper because you don't have to have this needle that you have to bring about all the time. You can keep it in your purse if you're a lady and what have you. It's just easier for someone to take it. For a lot of people who are afraid of needles, this is a better way. And the oral versions of these drugs are never going to be quite as effective as the injectables because it's got to survive the stomach, and your stomach destroys most things. But you don't have to have the drug to be as effective during the weight maintenance phase. So I think the orals coming online will begin to be considered for a maintenance situation. Now, the issue with the orals coming online is it makes it easier to get your hands on illicitly as well. So we need to keep an eye out of that.
And looking at the wider food environment, I mentioned earlier that Marks & Spencer Food, they're launching a range of ready meals that are specifically made for people on weight loss jabs. Now, in theory, I mean, it's a brilliant bit of marketing to do this. But if we take the view that actually ready meals are part of the cause of a lot of our health illnesses at the moment, because of the preservatives, because of the chemicals that go in them, I mean, they're still going to be in these ready meals, aren't they?
They are. I think there's two different ways of looking at it. Do I think that we need to have, excuse me, do I think we need to be in a situation where we have whole foods and cook everything from scratch? Yes, I do. But that would mean a wholesale restructuring of our food and environment, which will take time. And so I think we just need to be pragmatic. These ready meals are going to be there. They're going to be people who use the ready meals for any purpose, either you're busy or you're lazy or whatever, what a disease. So I do think that in the meantime, having more nutrient dense, leaving aside the processing and the preservatives, if we can have more protein or fiber, you know, whatever it is you're going to want to put into these products in the short term to medium term to support people on these, I am not against it. But yes, I do agree we need to restructure our food environment.
And do you think these jabs allow us to sidestep some of the things that might need to change about the access we have to certain types of food?
I do fear that governments, policymakers, will use these drugs as an excuse to sidestep the difficult decisions. Because these decisions about improving the food environment, improving the type of nutrients that actually go into a specific product cannot be done by the individual, right? And because we're just living our lives and going to the supermarket. They have to be done by policymakers. They have to be done through legislation. And this legislation is seldom, if ever, politically expedient, which means that it's like a hot potato to these to policymakers. I do fear that these policymakers will use these drugs as an excuse not to make these difficult decisions. I mean, it's in very many ways, this is why I do things, these interviews, right? I keep talking until I'm blue in the face to make sure that policymakers listen to an interview
or until I shut you up. But I'm not going to do that quite yet, because I want you to respond to this text that I've had from Jay, who says, stop taking weight loss drugs. If you don't have the self-discipline to stop eating crap and do exercise, then it's your own fault, you're fat. Now, there is a certain logic to that, isn't there?
Okay, there is a logic from a physics perspective. Clearly, if I ate less, or if you ate less, if everyone ate less, you'd lose weight. If you ate less rubbish food and better food, you'd be healthier and lose weight. All of this is true. I think the major issue is that there are going to be complex drivers to why people eat more. And we know a lot of genes that will drive people to eat more. So for some people, it is always going to be more difficult than others. And I think more people will need more support than others. And some of this support is going to be pharmaceutical.
Charles, always a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. You are the expert on this subject, and we always love talking to you. Thank you. That's Charles Yeo, Professor of Molecular Neuroendocrinology. No, I have no idea what that is either. At the University of Cambridge. Right, we'll come to your calls in a moment. You can talk about anything that we've talked about in that conversation with Charles there. It's 18 minutes past 11.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable, and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
FanningDental.co.uk.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day, and messages from people I didn't even know. My mates spelled out my name in tea lights, and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings, next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Bring your pensions together with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the art and design industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Keo, an art and design student in year 12.
As an art student, we get the chance to work on our own pieces, either in the studio or using the digital software. Some of my work has also been shown in galleries. And last week, I got the chance to attend a design agency to learn more about my future career.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 past 11. There is a school of thought that says that we are eventually going to be held to account for both the rubbish that we stuff into our bodies, particularly in terms of ready meals, and indeed the fact that we take these weight loss drugs. Because I am firmly of the view that the chemicals that are pumped into our bodies, predominantly through ready meals, are the cause of a lot of our long-term illnesses now. Now, I'm not a medical person, but that's a conclusion I've come to, and you can say, well, that's just a conspiracy theory, you've got no evidence for that. Well, there has to be a reason that some of our long-term illnesses are mushrooming, that the fact that we are so much more obese in this country than any other country in Europe, apart from Malta, I believe. Why is that? I mean, is it coincidence that we eat several times more ready meals than they do in any other European country? I don't think that is a coincidence. Call me a conspiracy theorist if you like. John is in Stoke-on-Trent. Hello, John.
Hey there, Ian. How are you doing? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. What would you like to say?
Well, yeah, I mean, our family sort of Mangiano journey started in February last year. My wife decided, you know what, I've got a busy life, kids, and we alternate with work, so it's difficult to find time to exercise. And you know what, we'll give it a go. And she had fantastic success, and since then she's lost 4 stone and in a really, really good position. After she was on a bit on about 5-6 months, I decided to give it a go as well. And that was all great until the price hike. Just 1 second. James.
I wish we had you on video now.
Like the one with the politicians again.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically, as the price hike went up, it became unsustainable for us to have it. So we made the change over onto the Wegovy.
Yeah.
And since then, I found the side effects to be that I've basically come off. I was staying that full for that long. I'd be waking up every morning, throwing up pretty much undigested food. Now, that's probably a little bit our fault because we do eat late. But, yeah, the difference between the two we found has been massive. And also the way that it affects you with the food. With Mangiano, we kind of had like a double effect. One, no craving to want food, but two, when you did eat, a massively reduced appetite. With the Wegovy, you don't think about food as much, but when you do start eating, you can still pack it away.
Mm-hmm.
So it works maybe in a different way. I don't know if that's right, people. But on the whole, I think it's a wonder drug, and obviously it'll do a lot and build a lot of confidence for a lot of people. But ideally, yeah, trying to do it. I thought the M&S Mangiano meals, by the way, we've been saying this, pubs should be doing Mangiano menus because it is, the downside is it is a very antisocial drug. If you've got one member of the family on it, and if eating or spending time together eating is sociable, that's gone.
Well, I think a lot of restaurants are doing that now, aren't they? Sort of doing sort of separate meals. I mean, maybe if you've got a menu with 20 things on it, three of them would be recommended for people on weight loss drugs.
And I think that's a fantastic thing to do, because I remember for the first 3 or 4 months when my wife was on it and steadily increasing through the doses. And with that, by the way, we did ours through a supermarket pharmacy, and we had to regularly update them each month with a weight check-in with like a picture of you on the scale holding your date and whatnot. So don't get me wrong, it's completely faceless. You know, I haven't got a clue who's signing it off and whether it's good, bad or indifferent. You know, that's just the way it goes. But yeah, it's... I found myself, we never sat down together. I get home from tea. I go, oh, right, should we do a spag bar? Should we have a lasagna? What should we have for tea? And not really bothered. I just have to go for tea and go to bed. So
you shouldn't be having spag bol if you're on a weight loss drug. That, I mean, you're committing two crimes there. You shouldn't be eating lots of carbohydrates, i.e. pasta, and you shouldn't be eating a lot of red meat.
Well, you should be my pharmacist, because nobody's told me that.
Well, it's very simple. Just Google it. Google, or go onto ChatGPT and say, what foods should I or should I not eat on a weight loss diet? And it's all there. And I've had that corroborated by my diabetes nurse as well. You need to eat a lot of protein and a lot of fibre. So white meats, chicken, turkey, that's fine. And lots of fish. Now, I don't like any fish apart from salmon, but I've found that I'm now having lots of salmon or chicken stir fries. If you'd told me 10 years ago that I would actually really enjoy stir fries, I'd have laughed in your face. But they're really, really healthy for people on weight loss jabs. So maybe, I mean, it's inevitably, I mean, I'm surprised you said that you haven't been sort of told what you should have to eat on one of these jabs, because it stands to reason that there are things that will actually help you with the weight loss and things that won't. And certainly from my experience, I mean, I have experienced that a bit of a loss of appetite. Sometimes if my partner piles things on my plate, I will leave some of it, which I wouldn't have done sort of 6 months ago. So I can tell that it's having a bit of an effect, but I haven't lost the amount of weight that I might have expected.
I think once you get up the doses, when I was making an occasional meal, we'd go from a plate to like a ramekin. And it would be like a kid's portion, it had like half. And you go, nope, I'm done. How are you satisfied? But so it definitely does it. But I think you've got the consistency of things.
John, thank you very much indeed. Simon says, Ian, this is not a long-term medication. What happens when you have to stop, and you will have to stop at some point? Well, I'm still unclear about that, as to whether it is something that you can just stay on, even at a low dose, for a long time. Giles Yeo there, I think, seemed to indicate that that was probably the case. I'm not sure I want to stay on it for a long time. And I think if you can educate your stomach to expect less, then maybe you don't have to do it for the long term. But I think it's still, even though he said that these drugs have been around for a very long, well, 20 years, he said, which was news to me, I still don't think there's been enough research publicly available on the long-term effects of keeping on them. Now, let's take this from Susan, who says, having worked with M&S on producing their ready meals, I can tell you these will be completely clean, no chemicals, no preservatives. A great deal of work goes into sourcing the raw materials that go into these ready meals now, and are definitely a healthy option for people who don't have the time or knowledge to cook their own meals. Well, I'm not going to disbelieve you, Susan, if you've been working on them, but the fact is that the non Manjaro type ready meals, they do have these chemicals in still and preservatives, and that's the reason they can be on the supermarket shelves for 2 or 3 days, because they have got preservatives in. Now, if you're saying that these new meals are only going to be available for 24 hours, otherwise they have to chuck them away, well, maybe, but I suspect that the cost of them is going to be substantially more from the normal ready meals. Carol's in Bexley. Hello, Carol.
Hello, Ian. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a little bit nervous.
You don't need to be nervous.
Trying my best. I'm in on week 5 of taking Manjaro for weight loss. I did try to seek advice or support from my GP and just was refused.
Even give you any advice?
No. So I've been thinking about it for a long time, about going with the weight loss drugs. But was worried about side effects, about if I was medically sound to take it, or might give myself like pancreatitis or anything like that, and also long-term side effects. So I went to my GP, said point blank, said, well, I can't prescribe it because you're not diabetic, which is fine. Said, yeah, I was willing to pay for it privately, but I'd like her advice. If she could look at my medical records, if it was safe for me to proceed. She said, no, that just was, no, I can't do that.
That's outrageous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is outrageous. So, yes, I am having to decide my own dosages. I'm getting good guys through an online pharmacy outlet, so I'm sort of comfortable with that. But as far as keeping sort of check on my bloods and that sort of thing, it's not going to happen.
So how long have you been on it? What
so
dosage?
This is week 5, so I've just upped my dosage this week to 5 milligrams from 2.5. And even then, I'm in this Facebook groups and all sorts of things give advice. The main one being just don't up automatically, go by your body. Yeah. You know, some people stay on 2.5 for ages, some go to 5. I have lost quite a bit of weight first 4 weeks, which is what any diet you expect to do well your first month. I've upped my dose, and then I'm thinking, well, maybe I shouldn't have done, because the first 4 weeks has been successful, but I'll see how I go. Hoping not to get up to full dosage, mainly because of the side effects, but also the cost.
What's it costing you?
So at the moment, my 5 meals was at £190, so that's not too bad.
And that's for a month?
That's for 4 weeks, yeah, for 4 weeks of jabs.
And
yeah.
How much have you lost?
I was half a pound shy of a stone.
See, I think that's really good, because in my first 5 weeks, I lost 4 pounds.
Oh, wow, okay. But you're saying you didn't adjust your diet, though?
No, I did. And I couldn't understand why I wasn't losing more, because I was playing by the rules. And I was told, well, look, different people react differently. Sorry.
Yes.
It's not everyone that's going to lose an awful lot of weight immediately, because I was going on the fact that my friend had gone down from, I think, 23 stone to 20 stone within 2 months.
Wow, yeah.
But I haven't had that experience.
Yeah, the bigger you are, the quicker you will lose it at the beginning. I mean, there's always that. Because part of my inspiration was the guy next door to me. He's lost six stone in about 8 months, I think. So, yeah.
Well, that, Good luck with it. Clearly, you're happy with it, even though you may not be happy with having to pay £190.
No.
And not happy with the fact that the doctor wouldn't give you any advice at all. Carol, thank you. Louise says, it's not outrageous. The job of the NHS GP is not to supplement private care. The job of an NHS GP, surely, is to help their patients be as healthy as they possibly can. Now, it's not costing the NHS anything because the NHS isn't having to pay for Carol's jab. But the fact that the doctor wouldn't even give her any dietary advice or refer her to someone who could give dietary advice, I do think is outrageous. Keep your calls coming on your experiences with Manjaro. What about the side effects? Some people have them, some people don't. And are you worried about the long-term effects? It's 11:32 on LBC. Lottie Morley has the news headlines.
The Foreign Office says staff are ready to help any British nationals affected by the fire at a popular ski resort. Swiss police say several dozen people are presumed dead and more than 100 injured as they celebrated the new year in Crom, Montana. A police officer who lost his wife and two children in a house fire in Brimscombe on Boxing Day has paid tribute to them. Tom Shearman described them as three of the greatest humans to ever grace our presence. And weather warnings for snow have been upgraded in northern Scotland from midday tomorrow. Less severe warnings for snow and ice cover parts of the same area, plus Northern Ireland, most of Wales and most of England. LBC weather, chilly to begin 2026 with snow and ice in northern parts. Dry and sunny elsewhere with a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
Now it's time to thank our partner for this episode, eBay.
Guys, as you know, I've just moved house and I realised we made one big mistake in the moving process.
Uh-oh.
We didn't do the clear out before packing up.
Oh, it's a schoolboy error that, Chris.
I know. But it's okay because I'm thinking now's the perfect time to have a little bit of a declutter because we're going into the new year. No better time to get through and find those hidden gems and give them a new home.
Yeah, too right.
Yeah, absolutely spot on, mate. I also moved on the same day as you, which is weird. And I sold so much stuff on eBay. It's made settling into the new place so much smoother. It's free and easy to sell on the eBay app, from fashion and tech to furniture and collectibles. Just snap, list and you're done.
Look, guys, you don't have to convince me. You know I love a bit of eBay. And when I get home, I'm going to actually sort out my wardrobe and get some new bits listed on eBay.
I keep saying I'm going to sort my wardrobes out as well. I need to do that. When it's this easy to sell for free, you can't help but say when it's eBay.
Download the eBay app and start selling for free today. Excludes vehicles and business sellers.
At Freedom Leisure, we're here to help improve lives through leisure. And we've got some incredible deals to help you feel good for less. Right now, there's no joining fee on monthly memberships and 3 months free with a 12-month membership. That includes swimming, gym, classes, sports and more. Search Freedom Leisure Membership Deals. Time limited offer. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Message Ian Dale on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
11:35 on LBC. The fact that more than 2 million people are on these weight loss jabs, I think, is an indication that this is one of the major medical developments of our times. And I think it's something that the government has got to really get to grips with in terms of regulation, because the black market for these drugs is getting out of control. I'd really like to hear from you in the remaining 25 minutes of this hour. If you have used black market weight loss jabs, how you got them, how much did they cost compared to what you have to pay normally, and how nervous you were about using them. Because there are going to be some very, very evil people trying to exploit this, because evil people always want to make as much money as possible with the least possible outlay. And we know that illegal drugs that are supplied to people in nightclubs, for example, the person taking them has no idea what's in them. And this is exactly the same, isn't it? Where if you get a pen that looks like a Manjaro pen, and they're fairly easy to replicate, I imagine, you have no idea what that it could be. Any clear liquid in that pen that you're injecting into yourself, why would you do that? Why would you take that risk with your body? Kath says, happily using Manjaro. To me, it's a massive health game changer, and it's vital that the price goes down and is rolled out pardon the pun, UK-wide. I'm mid-50s and have to pay full whack monthly, but it's worth it. If I'd waited until I was fatter or full-blown diabetic, OK, it would have been free, but I'd have been much worse. I save a lot on food and don't buy or crave pricey, sugary junk food, so that's good. The biggest win? I've lost 5 stone since April 2025. My ADHD symptoms are dramatically reduced. Better overall mood, better sleep, reduced reduced inflammation, far better mobility, as no lard over the joints, clothes fit again, reduced anxiety, enjoy eating whole foods in veggies and fruit, more protein. I'm only on 6.5, I was briefly on 7.5, but it was too big a jump, as I lost a lot of hair, a common symptom you combat by scaling up more slowly and taking pumpkin oil capsules and biotin supplements. Well, I don't have to worry about the hair loss, do I? I'd recommend Juniper, as they offer a program, and proper program and community. Yes, I hate paying, but to me, as long as they don't hike up the price anymore and ideally reduce it, I plan to stay on it for life, because when off it, briefly for surgery, the cravings came back quickly, suggesting that I'm born with the imbalance and the fuzzy ADHD thinking returned too. Mounjaro is the best as it targets two receptors. They didn't even know about the hidden dopamine boosting neurotransmitter boost benefits. Nor do I. And getting onto ADHD meds is a marathon journey. Clearly, different brains and bodies process the oh my goodness, all these words I can't pronounce, terzipatide chemicals differently, as I have very few side effects other than frequent urination and hair thinning. These are still small prices to pay for mobility back, brain fired up, feeling greater, well-being, eating better, moving, this does finish soon, believe it or not, moving more, escaping diabetes. I'm in full remission, whereas I was a few numbers off in April. And getting my life back, it's Mounjaro only for me, as it uniquely reduces the ADHD. Now, when will the pharmaceutical company drop the price? Well, you can blame President Trump for this, I think, because he forced them to increase the price of exporting Mounjaro. It's Eli Lilly, I think, that make it. And he wanted the price in America to be the same as it was in the rest of the world, which you can understand, I suppose. Let's go to Nick, who's in Huddlestone. Hello, Nick.
Hi, good morning, Ian.
Morning.
I've been on Mounjaro since June of last year, and I was put on it to actually replace one of my type 2 diabetes medications, because this, the Mounjaro was more effective. And any weight loss is basically a bonus, but I have lost about 9 kilos since then.
And is that what you expected to do?
Pretty much, because I haven't kind of altered my diet at all. I wasn't told what I can eat and what I can't eat. I'm just eating less of it. It's as simple as that.
Do you worry about the long-term effects?
No, because like yourself, I've had absolutely no side effects whatever.
And what dosage are you on?
I'm now up to the full 15 milligrams.
Ooh, 15?
Yeah,
you're the only you're only the second person I've ever come across who's been up to the full 15.
Yeah, and zero side effects. It's been absolutely brilliant. And it's done wonders for my HbA1c count when I get my bloods done every 3 months.
And what is that now?
That's down to 71 from 97.
Wow. Now, 97. Wow. I was up to 92 at one stage, but that was when I was being very bad.
Yeah.
I had mine done a few weeks ago, and I'm now down to 53.
Oh, wow. That's brilliant.
Because you're supposed to be somewhere in the mid-40s, aren't you? So that's the lowest I've been probably in 15 years, and I do attribute it entirely to Mounjaro.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, as I said, I was put on it to replace a type 2 diabetes drug that I've been on for years. It was a saxagliptin drug called Onglyza.
Never heard of it.
No. I was put on the saxagliptin drugs because I had a very bad reaction to metformin.
Right. Yes, because that is the normal one that most diabetics are on.
Yeah.
And that's to generate insulin, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. But I was spending more time in the bathroom than anywhere else.
Yes, that's a very nice way of putting it. But as you've gone up the dosages, has that part of it... I mean, you did say you had no side effects, but clearly that is a side effect. Has that part of it got worse as you've gone up the scale?
No, nothing at all. The adverse side effects was when I was on metformin in the early stages, but they took me off it because I just couldn't get on with it.
Mm.
So I went on to the Onglyza, and I take another one called Jardiance as well. And so when they put me on Monjaro, they took me off the Onglyza tablets, and they said that I shouldn't take them again, so I threw them all out.
Well, listen, Nick, I'm glad it's worked for you. Thank you very much for your call. Caroline says, appetite is a hormonal issue. It's all controlled by our insulin levels. The average Western diet plays havoc with insulin and the gut microbiome due to all the simple carbs, sugars and additives. We simply need to go back to eating whole foods, good proteins, animal and plant, vegetables, legumes and fermented foods, and healthy fats like olive oil. These are the foods we evolved to eat over hundreds of thousands of years. I was having a discussion the other day about why Spanish and Italian people always look so much healthier than anybody else. And we came to the conclusion it must be because of olive oil. Maybe we're completely wrong. I don't know. Thank you very much for that, Caroline. And here's another one. That is from Caroline, so I need to scroll down a little bit. This is from Carrie in Eltham. I'd love to know how many anti-vaxxers are taking fat jabs when there can be side effects and unknown long-term benefits. Long-term effects, rather, she says. Well, I've got no idea, but I hear the point that you're making with that one. Chris says, I took Mounjaro last year and it was mind-blowing. I lost a stone a month for the first 3 months on 2.5, 5 and 7.5 milligrams, then half a stone for the next 4 months on 10, 12.5 and 15, totaling 5 stone in 7 months. That was from 17.5 stone down to 12.5 stone. The only side effect was a bad bout of constipation, but I just increased my fibre and it resolved itself. Sadly, 15 months on, I'm back to 17.5 stone. Oh my goodness. But I know things... now that I didn't then, I didn't prepare for not being hungry at all and making sure to plan for smaller, nutrient-dense meals. So I just ate sweet junk food as snacks and took vitamins. I also didn't know how to go to the gym. That can't be right. I also didn't know to go to the gym and do resistance training, so I lost muscle as well as fat. I would recommend it to anyone, though you need to plan in advance for what it will be like and to eat those small, healthy meals and exercise. But it can be life-changing, there's no doubt about that. Well, Chris, that is awful to go down to 12.5 stone and then immediately go back to 17.5 because it kind of defeats the whole object of the exercise. But I totally agree with you about exercise and going to the gym. I've been going to the gym for 2 years now. I only go once a week and have a personal trainer because I know if I didn't have a personal trainer, I wouldn't go. So he makes me do things which are not designed to lose weight. They are designed to, and particularly I think for older people, sort of my age, the predominant benefit of going to a gym is just to keep your body supple. It's not to lose weight. It is just to keep a degree of fitness, build up some muscle and keep your body supple. And there's no doubt that having been doing this for 2 years now, I can move in a way that maybe I didn't 2 years ago. So it's been absolutely fantastic for me, and I would recommend it to anyone. And I think anybody that thinks that you can just solve all of your body issues with just by dieting is deluding themselves. You absolutely have to do exercise, and it really does make you feel a lot better. It's 11:46.
I'm Tom Swarbrick. Thank you for your calls throughout the year on LBC.
Because our young girls approach these foreign guys.
So it's up to the girls to not approach people who they think might be foreign. What is that girl meant to... Now, don't laugh, you despicable man. Why are you blaming a 15-year-old girl living as a woman doesn't make you a woman?
I trust people to be an expert in their own gender. If someone has been living as a woman for 15 years...
What does that mean, living as a woman?
I don't really know how I can answer the question again.
It's not about timeline.
Because
it's
you not said about 90 calendar. Days, Mr. Hooker. The president said 90
days. Let me answer the question and don't interrupt me.
I'll choose when I speak. Please carry on.
Then this interview is terminated.
I'll be back next week. Taking your calls on LBC.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer Card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026. A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
At Lidl, we value getting you the most out of your money. Like switching from Tesco to Lidl and saving £32 on this week's big shop. See the savings at lidl.co.uk/usave and start the new year feeling like a savvy saver. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 10th of the 12th, 25. Tesco also sell other products. See online for more details. EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. New year, new plans, new deals. With up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb, holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. Ian Dale. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:49, a very cynical person says here, what muscle can you build with 1 day a week in the gym? Well, if I tell you that when I first went to the gym, I could leg press about 90 kilograms, I can now leg press 160 kilograms. Now, that hasn't happened by magic. That is because of the exercises that I've done at the gym over the last 2 years. So, yes, my personal trainer wants me to go a lot more regularly, at least twice a week, but... We all have things. I mean, I can't commit to doing twice a week. I know I should do twice a week, but we all lead busy lives, and well, I just don't have time. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. Now, if this is a topic you're affected by, we do advise you to consult your GP. Hopefully you won't have the same experience as one of our previous callers did, and that they will give you advice. The NHS also has sort of dietitians that can help advise on these things. And just because you're buying a weight loss drug privately, I don't think that should exclude you from being given that kind of advice. And I wouldn't normally recommend Dr. Google for medical things, but there are some very good websites about advising people on diets, particularly with regard to weight loss drugs, and ChatGPT. Again, you can't use them as gospel, but they can give you some good advice. Judith is in Swansea. Hello, Judith.
Oh, hello, Ian. The last time I spoke to you, your nurse had suggested you went on Mounjaro. And it was exactly the same afternoon as my locum doctor suggested I bought it.
Right.
So because I'm in Wales, we don't get it here very easily. So I'm having to pay privately, and I had to pay privately for a consultation with the GP. Because I'm 84, and I wanted to discuss with him, because there is no information about elderly patients. But suffice to say, I've lost 3 stone since August. I've now got to the right BMI, and I'm weaning myself off it. To begin with, I had some nausea, but nothing since, and I have nothing but good news, really, about Mounjaro, except for the cost, of course.
Yes, which is quite an integral part to it, isn't it? And I mean, so, can you say, tell us how much you were paying for it?
Yes, I've just looked it up. I've just had two lots of 10 milligram syringes, and it has cost me £520.
Wow.
Yeah, and of course, on top of that, I have a prescribing fee from a private GP.
That's a hell of a lot of money, isn't it?
It is, but I have to tell you, I don't go near Tesco or anywhere else. I eat very little. I am medically trained, so I do know how to eat properly, and I wouldn't be buying Marks and Spencer's high-protein meals, because that's what I've been eating anyhow. I mean, a chicken is a chicken, isn't it? and fish is fish, you know. You know what a healthy diet is, and because you're not attracted. I mean, you've just been to Christmas and I've got a fridge full of chocolate. Well, this time last year, it wouldn't have been there. It would have been eaten. It was a comfort thing. My husband died a few years ago and you just comfort eat. Mm. So I thought the blood sugar was going up and I thought I'm not going to be diabetic. That comes with a load of problems. So I thought, here goes. So I can't say I've remortgaged, but it's cost a lot.
Well, I'm glad it's worked for you, Judith. Thank you very much indeed. The old cynic has been back saying, you bench 160 kilograms. Ha ha. Okay, Ian. Now, I can promise I'm not lying. In fact, what I'll do, especially for you, even though you haven't given us your name, I'm going to the gym, is it, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday next week. I will get Aaron, my personal trainer, to video me doing 160 grams leg press. It's not a bench press, it's a leg press. So I can prove it to you, because I might try and up it to 170. I can break my own record, and I'll put it on my Instagram page so you can actually see me doing it, because I'm sure that will be a big turn on for everybody. Let's go to Farah, who's in Southfields. Hello, Farah.
Hi, Ian. Happy New Year.
And you.
So I've been on Mounjaro 5 milligrams since July, and I've lost almost 3 stone. So I was 106 kilos and I've gone down to 88. I did change my diet, but I did allow myself a little bit of carbs. I'm Asian. I can't live without rice. and the reason that I gained so much weight, because I was always a slim person. And just to say, at 106 kilos, I was as heavy as I was the day I went in to have my twins. So I was huge in that regard. But the reason that I went in is that 5 years ago, I had breast cancer treatment. And because I was estrogen positive, the kind of drugs they gave me, it actually made you gain weight. So in 2 years, I had gained almost 20 kilos, 325. I hadn't changed my diet other than sort of cutting back on sugar. And you would have thought, given what I went through, it was 12 rounds of chemo, 16 antibody and 2 really big surgeries, which actually Dr. Victoria Rose, who heads up Ideals and goes out to Gaza, she's the surgeon there, performed on me. You would have thought that I would have been more careful with my diet. But I think part of cancer is almost some of us ignore it to a certain stage. And, you know, it's always there. But, I was so scared I kind of ignored it for a bit. Mm. So when my weight goes up, you produce more estrogen, which increases your risk of reoccurrence. And it came to the point where my doctor, she just said, you know, what are you doing to yourself? It could come back. And I just thought, I can't put my family through this again. And it really scared me. And so she referred me to an endocrinologist. He initially asked me to change my diet, which is dropping the carbs, but I just couldn't sustain it because I just wasn't losing the weight. And I think you need to see some changes to sort of spur you on. So he put me on 5 milligrams of Mounjaro, and I couldn't be happier. I'm going back to who I was. And I think part of, you know, cancer recovery is to be able to see who you were, when you look in the mirror. And it's really, really helped. And I would just say to anybody who's going through breast cancer treatment to think about their diet and see if you can get referred to a nutritionist and just take really good care of yourself. But I don't regret it. I didn't
the only time I had side effects was on the first day. I had a terrible headache and real tiredness, almost like COVID symptoms. But the next day, I seemed to adjust to it. Mm. And I have eaten things over Christmas that I probably shouldn't, but I've continued to lose some weight. It was only a kilo, but I haven't put it on. And I just think with Monjari, you know, you really do need to change your diet. It's not a magic injection.
Well, that is the conclusion I've come to, in that I don't think I've changed mine enough. I think I did initially, but I've slipped back to some old ways. Farah, thank you very much indeed. Apparently I said that I could leg press 160 grams. Well, I think a flea could do that. 160 kilograms. Thanks, Warren, and others for pointing that out. Right, quick final call. Paul in New Southgate. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Monjaro, fabulous. Enjoyed it. Couple of vague days. You kind of forget your PIN number and stuff like that. But otherwise, yeah, I've been losing £2 a week, just gentle, since May. Hadn't had chocolate until this Christmas period. And, you know, I was a chocolate fiend. And it took away the food noise.
The food noise, now that's an interesting one. So effectively what you mean is it reduce your appetite, reduce your craving?
Well, it's a craving. Appetite, I've managed to have like decent sized meals, you know, not quite tapas size, but bigger than that. But it's just normally, you know, I'm bored at work, or I'm fed up, I'm just going to go and get a chocolate bar, I'm going to get a cake or a sandwich, and it stopped that.
And really, that's all you can ask for, isn't it? And it has reduced my appetite, reduced my cravings, certainly in the first couple of months. I have a very sweet tooth, and it did mean that I didn't actually want my sort of daily packet of fruit gums. Thank you very much, Paul. Another Paul says, the only thing I agree with said by your beloved strict mistress, the Baroness Thatcher, was that one should always be a little hungry and a little chilly. Paul says he's 64, muscle percentage 83%, fat 11%, smug, you bet. Thank you very much indeed, Paul. Well, talking of smugness, let's talk about vegans, shall we, in the next hour? Because it seems to me, and I've got no evidence for this beyond anecdotal evidence, that veganism in this country is on the wane, that it's less popular than it once was. Now, this has been proved, I suppose, in a way, by a former Veganuary cheerleader who's defected to help run a meat-eating campaign. Can you believe? Well, it is the start of January. Are you going to take part in Veganuary this year? Haven't seen much marketing or posters or media on that this year, so let's put that right. Is it something that you've done before? Would you do it again? And do you think veganism is on the wane? And if so, why?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the Foreign Office says it's monitoring the situation after a major fire at a popular ski resort in the Swiss Alps. Local police say dozens of people are presumed dead and around 100 more were injured. It happened in a bar in Crom, Montana, as people celebrated the new year. Stefan Ganzer, head of security for the Valais Canton, says authorities have ruled out a terror attack.
Witness statements from our first investigation suggest that the incident is a fire, so when we talk about a blast, it was not an explosive device that caused the fire, but there was a fire that spread very quickly. When there is fire in an enclosed atmosphere, that leads to blasts. So there's not been an explosion, but it is the effects of the fire.
A Gloucestershire police officer has described his wife and two children as three of the greatest humans following their deaths in a house fire on Boxing Day. Tom Shearman, who tried to rescue his family, says he can't begin to describe the anguish and trauma. Finola, 7-year-old Eve and 4-year-old Ona were killed in Brimscombe near Stroud. Experts say pharmacies in England could play a transformative role in HIV prevention. The Terence Higgins Trust says making treatment available in the local community rather than sexual health clinics could offer more flexibility and convenience. And marching bands, cheerleaders and acrobats are getting ready to take part in the London Parade. The event, which marks the new year, is celebrating its 40th anniversary. Dan Kirkby is the parade's communications director.
It's going to be the biggest, the best, the most fantastic fun that London
can have. We are celebrating 40 years in style. We've got 8,000 performers who will be parading through central London from Green Park Station outside the Ritz Hotel, Piccadilly, Piccadilly Circus, down to Trafalgar Square and Whitehall, ending up in Parliament Street near Parliament Square.
Lots of roads around the West End will be closed for the event, which starts at 1 p.m. LBC weather, a chilly start to 2026 with snow and ice for some parts of northern England, dry and sunny elsewhere with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Now, I'm as guilty as anyone when it comes to ignoring things. Rogue grey hairs, red flags in relationships, or that service reminder on your car dash. Luckily, that one's easy. Visit Cinch for fat-free servicing at over 100 locations. Any car, whether you bought it from Cinch or not. With MOTs, $39.95 and servicing from only $129.95. To book your service or buy your next car, visit cinch.co.uk. See cinch.co.uk/servicing for details, terms and exclusions apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good afternoon to you. It's 3 minutes past 12 on LBC. I'm Ian Dale here with you until one. Now, last year, around 700,000 people signed up to the Veganuary Challenge, i.e. they became vegans for the month of January. I've always thought this is a really weird thing. What, if you want to be a vegan, just be a vegan. Why would you just do it for a month? I suppose you can just find out if you can do it. And believe it or not, there are, in 2024, there were around 2.5 million vegans in the UK. And the number has, well, more or less doubled actually over from 2023 to 2024. Now, I wonder whether that rise is still going on. In fact, I'm wondering whether there has actually been a decline over the last 12 months, because you don't hear so much about veganism recently. And I haven't seen any big marketing campaign for Veganuary this year. I mean, it's still obviously occurring. And I want to know whether you've signed up to doing it, what your experiences of a vegan diet have been. In some ways, we can compare this to the last hour where we were asking people, well, what effect has going on a weight loss drug had on you? What effect has going on a vegan diet had on you? Because I've always gone from the maybe slightly old-fashioned view that a balanced diet is what we should all aspire to be on, where we have a mixture of things that we put into our body, whether it's meats, whether it's vegetables, whether it's fruits, etc. And I've always thought a balanced diet surely has to be the most healthy diet. But when you talk to convinced vegans, they will tell you that they believe that their diet is far healthier, even though it doesn't contain any meat or, I think I'm right in saying, any fish. It's all sort of based around plants. Now, I don't see how that can be so healthy. But as I say, if you're a vegan, you'll probably tell me that you are convinced that it is. So if I'm right that veganism is on the way in this country, why is that? I mean, are you somebody who has tried a vegan diet, but it didn't really work for you and you've come off it? 0345 6060 973. And is there a difference between a vegan diet and a plant-based diet? And I mean, is there an absolute definition of veganism? Because I know several people that they class themselves as vegans, but they still sort of, on the odd occasion, partake in meat or fish. Now, to me, that's cheating. You can't call yourself a vegan if you ever eat meat and presumably also fish. You can be a pescatarian, but that's not being the same as a vegan, is it? Well, interestingly, somebody called Tony Vanelli, he was head of communications at Veganuary for nearly 6 years, having spent decades fighting to end animal cruelty. Sorry, I said he, it's a she. But she's now urged people to forget the campaign and go back to eating meat, claiming that vegan dogma is not only unhelpful, but actually damaging to the fundamental goal of reducing animal suffering. Instead, she's promoting a challenge in which three competitive eaters will consume nothing but animal products for a whole day. Well, that is a worm that's turned, isn't it? Now, Veganuary actually launched in 2014, and it was run by a UK non-profit, and it's an annual pledge in which people give up meat and dairy for a month, and supporters say they want to see a vegan world that is kinder to animals and the environment. So I want to hear basically your experiences of a vegan diet. Well, let's talk to Rhiannon Lambert, best-selling author and registered nutritionist. Her book is called The Fibre Formula, and it's out in March. Rhiannon, very good afternoon to you. Thanks for coming on. Do you agree with me that veganism might be on the wane in this country?
Oh, Happy New Year. Thanks for having me. Do you know, it's a really interesting conversation, and I was listening to you describe the nuances between how people describe their diets. And I would say it's probably less popular. Predominantly, in my opinion, as a health professional, I think it's got many factors behind this. It could be the cost of living. I think there's a lack of education still around food. I think we've had a rise in ultra-processed foods. We've actually had a decline in fake meat items, you know, alternative products that were designed like a vegan sausage compared to a meat sausage. Even though we know these items are, in the long term, stereotypically healthier to consume. And let me explain why, because there's less saturated fat, there's no links to cancer. Whereas, of course, we know that ultra processed foods and red and processed meats are class one carcinogens. So there's lots of nuanced conversations here, but I would agree that I think the term vegan compared to the term plant-based has become less popular, but I still think we'll see a rise in numbers.
Now, as a nutritionist, also, do you agree with me that a balanced diet is probably the best diet for most people? I'm sure there will be people who say, no, because of my particular health conditions, a vegan diet is best for me. But generally, surely a balanced diet is what we should all aspire to.
I think it's a really, really good concept, a balanced diet, because we're all unique. No one diet or one way of eating is going to suit all of us. Some of us are more naturally predisposed to having anemia or an iron deficiency, and others might be designed physiologically that they can't have dairy. You know, they have a lactose intolerance, and we're actually 60% of the world can't consume dairy. So we have to look at a balanced plate as, does your plate contain protein? Also, by the way, protein can come from beans and pulses, and we have a target in the UK to double the intake of beans by 2028 because we're not consuming enough fibre. We have a fibre gap. 96% of us, Ian, do not get enough fibre. So we have to look at that. So protein on your plate, carbohydrates, the right type of carbs. I don't want to bore your listeners by saying, opt for brown bread over white most of the time, but it's stereotypically go for the right carbs, get a bit of protein, and we need more vegetables. How can we still not be hitting our five a day in this country? And to me, if we can find a way of eating that works for us, that is balanced, like you said quite rightly, that's the key. But I will caveat that we need to reduce our meat consumption for the planet. So we're looking at sustainability reasons moving forwards in 2026. I really hope that we'll see a shift towards eating for the planet a little bit more. And that's because the recommended portion of red meat a week is around 98 grams. Now, I wonder how many of the listeners today, probably one steak is heavier than that, so are consuming more than the recommended amount a week.
But who does these recommendations? I mean, you say we should eat for the planet, which to many people would sound like a bit of woke nonsense. I mean, surely we should be eating for our own health.
It's a really good one. This was actually research that came out in 2025, the big Lancet report we had that was announced in Stockholm, and it looks at a full body of evidence-based research. They're not telling people to give up their favourite foods. As a health professional myself, I just want people to be happy and get a balanced plate, like you said at the beginning. But what we need to be looking at is just being sensible. You know, we need to eat within moderation. I think we're so used to excess and we're so used to food availability around us. And there's also the privilege conversation here when it comes to budget, like I mentioned earlier, and cost of living and food. But we need to reduce the amount of meat and get more plants and diversity in. And this is a well evidence-based body of research. I mean, the Mediterranean diet is essentially a plant-based diet, Ian.
Yeah.
You asked me the question at the beginning, what's the difference between veganism and plant-based nutrition? Veganism is the omission of all animal products. They don't touch it. And that can be for ethical reasons as well as sustainable reasons and health reasons. But plant-based, which I've actually written another book on, as well as the fiber formula I've got coming out, The Science of Plant-Based Nutrition, is just reducing animal produce. You can still have your favourite foods. We've just got to get a bit more creative in the kitchen.
What do you say to people like me who just don't like vegetables very much? I mean, you say about the Mediterranean diet, and I do love, like, grilled vegetables, like peppers and onions and all that. And well, I had a hiatus hernia once, and they said, that's what you need to do. Go on a Mediterranean diet for a time, and it did work wonders. But I only like peas, carrots, peppers and onions. I don't like any other vegetable. I don't like any green vegetables at all. And nobody's ever going to convince me to like them. I have grown to like stir fries, which, well, you can sort of mix up the green ones in other ones. But that's about as far as I think I'll ever go, because I do regard broccoli and spinach as the invention of the devil. Because I just think they taste disgusting.
So did my two-year-old at one point.
Well, I have the brain of a two-year-old sometimes. So.
No, Ian, it's a really good question. And I think you don't have to diversify the amount of plants. If that's all you want to eat, let's just get creative with the carbohydrate basis then to up your fibre intake and try a bit more fruit.
Yeah, but I'm not allowed to eat the carbohydrates on my Manjaro diet, and also because I'm a diabetic. I keep being told, no, carbohydrates are also bad for you.
It's the type of carbohydrate. Ah. So I'm going to get into those silly posh words that everyone will have heard of, quinoa, and it sounds really, I know, woke when I'm saying it and all these sorts of things. But I promise you, if you look down the supermarket shelves, everyone probably just eats rice and pasta in the UK, and bread. They're like the top three consumed carbs. It's much cheaper to buy in bulk some other grains and pulses, which contain fiber and protein. So, you know, if you just want to make a risotto, I mean, risottos take ages, I'd actually say orzo. It's like a small pasta that looks like rice. Takes half the time. You don't have to cook for ages. Chuck your peas in, Ian. Peas are great. You've got enough vitamin C. In fact, one red pepper gives a child, for instance, the whole intake, daily intake of vitamin C. And all you need is two kiwis a day to get more than in an orange. So you can get enough vitamins and minerals. My concern is the fiber, which is the overall diet of the carbs, the plants, the protein. So when you said you can't have carbs, I would love to see you in my clinic, because I work with lots of people that are told this. And we look at reducing the overall load of your blood sugar response to eating loads of carbs at once, and how we slow down the release of sugars by pairing it with healthy fats like the olive oil. You mentioned you were recommended the Mediterranean diet, oily fish, if you're able to consume that. I know it's not that popular here in the UK, but there is a way of getting the fiber in and not having to suddenly eat loads of vegetables that you know you don't like. Broccoli, why did someone say broccoli is the best veg in the world? I would argue they're all vegetables are pretty super. If you can eat a few, that's great.
Yeah, well, broccoli certainly isn't. But now your new book, The Fibre Formula, it's out in March. I mean, fibre as a word is an unsexy word. How can you really get people interested in fibre?
I'm hoping you can help me, because I really think this is a pretty big public health crisis. 96% is the statistic of us do not get the 30 grams a day. We're seeing an increase in bowel cancers in younger ages, health deteriorating. Of course, we've got GLP-1s and we've got weight loss jabs, which means people are reducing their overall intake of food as well, and their diets weren't good to begin with. So we're not hitting those amounts. And I cover all of these questions in the book. So it's like a nutrition Bible with helpful infographics and 60 recipes in the bag, which will stick to your favorite few veg that you've mentioned there, and lots of them. But I have to say that it's easier than you think. The problem we've got is a world of demonization of food and a dichotomy of extremes on social media, where you see people saying you can never have Weetabix again because it's an ultra processed food. Whereas I would argue that's full of fiber, it's fortified, people don't have to cook anything, and you can chuck it in a bowl in the morning, top it with some extra seeds you've got in the cupboard, or fruit that you have a banana with it, and already you're hitting nearly 10 grams of fiber. You've only got two more meals left to hit 30. So we have to really focus on going back to basics. We've lost the love of cooking in this country, and I really think until we can get a little bit of that back, it's a bit of a challenge, which is why I wrote the book.
Well, on that we can agree. We'll give the final word to Paul, who says, give peas a chance.
Get it? Yeah, full of protein and fibre. I love peas.
They have to be petit pois, though. I don't like the big ones. Thank you very much, Rhiannon. Good luck with the book. That's Rhiannon Lambert. Her book is out in March, The Fibre Formula. So, veganism. Is veganism on the wane? Now, if you type that question into ChatGPT, it'll tell you that it's not, and that the evidence is that veganism is still on the rise. But I wonder if that is true. And are you somebody who's been a vegan but has decided, no, that isn't for me? If so, why? And what's the difference between vegan and plant-based? 0345 6060 973. And perhaps more importantly, are you going to take part in Veganuary? Because if nobody phones in and says they are, then I think that'll rather prove my point that veganism is on the way. But then on the other hand, if you don't phone in, you're going to have to listen to me drone on for the next 45 minutes. And let's face it, no one wants that. It's 12:16.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful gut health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Beautiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulguthealth.com/radio.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prep for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
19 minutes past 12, Bob says, give peas a chance was a play on words to John Lennon. Give peace a chance. Happy New Year, Bob. Yes, Bob, I know. That's why I read it out, because I thought it was vaguely amusing. I'm not sure. I think it went over Rhiannon's head a bit, but no, I thought that was quite funny. Sarah says, I am vegan means I don't wear animals or exploit plant-based, and it's on the rise. Well, let's look at that. Let's look at it from a different point of view, because I think there will be most vegans, I suspect, will be on a vegan diet because they believe that they shouldn't eat meat. It's just, I mean, you might say, well, that is a vegetarian diet, but I think it goes a lot further than that. But are you a vegan for moral reasons? And if you are, what are those moral reasons? Because I think there is this narrative that vegans do tend to be a little bit superior on the reasons that they are vegans. And I think that winds people up in the other direction, doesn't it? Nobody likes to hear someone pretending that they're somehow superior because they lead a more moral lifestyle. I mean, does morality even come into the debate on foods? 0345 6060 973. The healthiest carbs are things like lentils and green peas, high in fibre and protein, but simple or refined carbs, as with sugar, have to be cut out, says Caroline. Well, I think that is very true. But do you not think that having a little bit of what you like, a little bit of everything, is much more healthy than just having a constant repetition of a vegan diet? Now, obviously, there are different aspects to a vegan diet, different foods that you eat, some of which people who aren't vegans would quite happily eat. But if you look at the number of shelves in supermarkets that have vegan food on display for people to buy, I haven't noticed, not that I actually do the supermarket shopping in our house, but whenever I have been in supermarkets, I've always been quite surprised at how few shelves there are with vegan offerings. And that, to me, is evidence that the number of people buying vegan food is not actually significantly rising a lot at the moment. And when you look at some of the vegan offerings on offer, and as I say, I said last hour or earlier this hour, I had a hiatus hernia a few years ago, and I was advised to go on essentially a kind of vegan diet and cut out a lot of the foods that I would normally eat because it would help. And I did go on a sort of Mediterranean diet, and I remember going to the supermarket and buying vegan cheese, and what else did I get? A couple of other things anyway. And I have to say, I thought it was all disgusting. I mean, the smell of the vegan cheese, okay, there is normal cheese, it's quite smelly and horrible. But I really thought, I don't know how people can eat this on a day-to-day basis. I really don't. And nothing's ever happened to convince me otherwise. Isabel says, you're confusing vegans and plant-based. Veganism is not a diet, it is a lifestyle. Isabel, give me a call and explain that in more detail, would you? 0345 6060 973. Veganism is a lifestyle. Well, I suppose I can see that in some ways, but surely is a diet as well. Chris is in Brighton, which I imagine Brighton is the home of veganism.
Well, it likes to portray itself as such, and I think probably you're correct to refer to it as such, because it was certainly vegan restaurants and cafes proliferated down here a long time before and, elsewhere.
And that's an interesting thing, because I think in East London as well, there was a time 3 or 4 years ago when vegan restaurants were opening left, right and centre. But I wonder how commercial they've been and do they still exist?
Oh, well, certainly, I mean, I can vouch for Brighton. They certainly do. They're still as popular as they ever were. And also, vegan options elsewhere have proliferated, which I don't, you know, perhaps East London or other locations, perhaps vegan-only restaurants may be less visible on the high street because they're not needed so much due to the, you know, the growth in vegan options in other restaurants. Because I do think perhaps it's become more mainstream, and that might be why you're seeing less of it sort of marketed exclusively for vegans. Because you know, if you can get a nice vegan meal in a restaurant where your meat-eating mates can go, then, you know, you're all catered for. You don't need to look for an exclusively vegan sort of restaurant. So, but down here in Brighton, it's still, you know, vegan-only places seem to be, you know, doing well. But also, you were mentioning about you disliking vegan food and having a problem with, you know, vegan food. I have a sort of a bit of a problem with the term vegan itself, in a way, because I think it puts people off food that is vegan, that is totally, you know, not space food, as some people would view it. I mean, for instance, beans on toast is vegan. You're eating a vegan breakfast if you're having beans on toast, but you wouldn't necessarily refer to it as vegan food, would you? It's a vegan breakfast. So, you know, I think there is in certain people's eyes that when you label food as vegan, they immediately sort of think it's something weird. But it's just food. The way I look at it, it's just food. You know, and you can eat a balanced, healthy meal on any diet, so long as you're, you know, doing what you correctly said, actually, at the beginning of the program, cut out the processed element. Mm. I mean, I was pleased to hear you say that, because that is such a big deal at the moment, the amount of processed food that people eat in any diet, you know. But I would also say that you can eat a fully balanced and healthy diet on a plant-based, non meat-based diet. It's just a case of be balanced in what you eat, you know. And
you see, somebody here, Matthew, is taking issue with you on saying beans on toast is a vegan diet, because if the toast is buttered, which it surely has to be before the beans go on, then it isn't vegan, is it?
Oh, you can. There's so many plant-based spreads.
Matthew's
now
nitpicking,
that actually are, you know, totally healthy. I mean, you can get olive oil-based spreads now, you know. So yeah, beans on toast is can be quite simply vegan. So, you know, next time you eat it, you can say, "Oh, I've had a vegan meal there," and it wasn't disgusting, and it wasn't space food. Beans on toast is totally vegan.
Has to be Heinz beans, though, doesn't it? I mean, you, any other beans, just they don't live up to it.
Well, I'm not going to name the supermarket because I might get into trouble, but there is a budget brand market that I find does better beans than Heinz, and actually has less sugar content in as well.
Well, that is true,
which is a good thing.
You don't think of baked beans having any sugar content, but they are absolutely riddled with it, aren't they?
Yes. Well, again, that's what you were alluding to at the beginning of the program, is we need to take more care on what we eat and eat less processed food, and we would all become healthier, whether we're meat eaters, vegans, pescatarians, whatever. It's the point I'd like to make is that a balanced diet is a balanced diet, whether it's plant based, meat based, or whatever. But it takes a bit of care and knowledge to achieve that. I mean, I've been vegan for 30, if I'm going to use that label, I've been on a non meat based diet for 30 years. And so I was doing it before it was trendy, I guess you'd say. Yeah. And that was simply, really, it was the reasons for it. You asked why people go vegan, but my reasons at the start was sort of animal welfare, being sort of shocked when I found out about industrialized animal agriculture and the cruelty involved in that.
So for you, there was a moral aspect to this as well.
Oh, totally. That was the initial kind of interest, was the moral aspect of where does my food come from, and what are the processes involved in getting it to my plate, and would I allow the treatment being dished out to that creature that's on my plate to be dished out to, say, my pet dog that I'm looking at on my sofa next to me. And it was a case that the more I found out about industrialized animal farming, the more I was shocked at the scale of it, you know, the enormity of it, the amount of animals that are produced, all the processes that are required to feed and water those animals, never mind the actual slaughtering of the rearing of them, the confining of them and the slaughtering of them, the chemicals that are involved in the rearing of them. And I was horrified by the whole thing. And it was something that I was not aware of. I just used to view, I view the sausage on my plate. Oh, it's a tasty sausage. And that's as far as it would go. But unfortunately, it's a lot more than just the sausage. It's a whole series of processes that are required to get it to your plate.
That's always been something that has bemused me, when you can have vegan sausages or vegan beef burgers. I mean, if you're really so interested in having a proper sausage or a beef burger, have one.
Well, yes, but if having a proper sausage, a meat-based sausage, if you are disgusted by the process that's required to get that proper sausage to your plate, but you love the taste of a sausage, then I personally, don't have a problem with some eating a non-meat sausage. You know, I don't really care what it's called, if it's tasty and doesn't involve factory farmed animal getting abused to the point of death, then I'll eat a fake sausage. I'll happily eat a fake sausage rather than eat a proper sausage if it means the involving myself in a set of processes I'm greatly opposed to, if that makes sense.
All right, Chris, thank you very much indeed. Keep your calls coming on veganism. Is there a moral aspect to veganism? Chris seems to think so there. Is that your experience too? Are you starting Veganuary? Have you decided you've done it in the past, you're not going to do it again? And maybe you have been a vegan, but you've stopped being a vegan. Why is that? 0345 6060973. Now, in a moment, we'll get the latest on the protests in Iran and take more of your calls on veganism. It's 12:31 News Headlines with Emily Lang.
Swiss police say several dozen people are presumed dead after a fire at a ski resort bar. Officials say around 100 more were hurt when it happened in Crans-Montana in the early hours of this morning. A police officer who lost his wife and two children in a house fire in Brimscombe on Boxing Day has paid tribute to them. Tom Shearman described them as three of the greatest humans to ever grace our presence. And many people will see their energy bills rise from today. The price cap will increase by 0.2%, leading to a rise of around 28 pence a month for the average household. LBC weather, a chilly New Year's Day with snow and ice in northern parts, dry and sunny elsewhere with a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Beautiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulgutthealth.com/radio.
Ian Dale, text 84850. This is LBC.
12:34 on LBC. Jason says the entire fresh produce section is a vegan offering, Ian. Most of the breads, all the grains, vegans can eat them. Sean says it sounds like you're talking about vegan processed foods. A healthy vegan diet is largely whole foods. Becky says my 1-year-old loves spinach, sweet corn and banana cupcakes. Well, I'm very pleased for you. Thank you all for those texts. We'll come back to more of your calls on the whole subject of Veganuary in just a moment. But first, I want to get the latest on the protests that are going on in Iran. We covered this, was it yesterday or the day before, spent an hour talking about it. And I think things have developed a little since then. So let's get an update from Deepa Parau, who is a journalist who's been covering the protests which have erupted across Iran in the last few days. Deepa, thank you very much for joining us. How have things developed over the last 48 hours?
So, Ian, especially this morning, the situation has turned quite deadly because we have local witnesses sending over pictures of young people, body full of pellet wounds. And I'm waiting for confirmation if there are deaths. although there are local news, local citizen journalists saying there are at least two or three deaths, but I need to make sure I confirm with human rights groups. So I'm currently waiting for confirmation. I have seen videos that the security forces opened gunfire on protesters in this city called Lordegan, and the situation is quite deadly as civilians are on the streets, protesters are throwing stones, and they're obviously very angry.
And what is the primary cause of these protests? Is it the economic situation, or is it political repression, or both?
So this round of protests began on Sunday because of the plunging currency, which is at record low. However, the protesters have made it very clear from the beginning that they are facing multiple issues. There's water crisis. They cannot feed their children. There's not enough money to go on with daily lives. And there's human rights abuses that have been happening over the past decades and a couple of decades. So they're just on the edge, and they want the regime to go. So they want the end of the regime. So that's the main message that I'm getting from protesters.
And is it significant that these protests are happening all over the country, not just in the capital?
Absolutely. It started in the Grand Bazaar in Tehran, while shopkeepers went on strike, and now it's spread to universities. It's spread across the country to several provinces, and I know at least over 15 to 16 cities are already have already joined the protests.
And what message is coming out from the government? Because obviously they will try to do what they've done in the past and yes. sort of repress the protests. Is there any indication that this time it's different and that these protests may have a chance of not only destabilizing the regime, but removing it?
I think so, because the message I'm getting from inside is that after the 12-day war with Israel in June, the regime is at its lowest, and the protesters think that this is the time to ensure that the regime ends. And a lot of them are hopeful, and they've told me, I wrote a report on it for The Guardian yesterday, they told me that this is the last nail in the coffin, and they're just waiting for more people to come on the streets and ensure that the regime goes away. But they're also trying to urge police forces to join them. However, the police forces, as we saw today with many videos online, that they've started shooting at protesters, so they don't have any trust in anybody that's associated with the regime.
Because we have been here before, haven't we, in the protests in 2022. Yes. I think there was an expectation that they might lead to some sort of meaningful, maybe not regime change, but meaningful change. And no. That didn't happen. You seem to be a little bit more confident that this time it could happen.
Definitely, because last time they were on the streets and they really did not have, they knew what they wanted, but they did not continue because the regime began executing protesters, and that pushed them off the streets. They started arresting the families of protesters who were killed, and they continue to arrest families of protesters who were killed. So there's been this atmosphere of fear, for sure. But they've reached a point where I think, combined with the economic crisis and water crisis, they know that it's either now or never. So that's the message that I've been getting from them.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Deepa Parrau, who's a journalist who's been covering the protests which have erupted across Iran in the last few days. We will certainly keep an eye on that. Very interesting situation developing there. Right, back to veganism. Ruth says, Ian, you do realise that animals aren't naturally shaped like sausages and burgers? No. Really? Honestly, I didn't know that. They're human constructs designed to hide the truth of the hideous processes behind meat production. As Paul McCartney is quoted as saying, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, we'd all be vegetarian. Much easier to stick your head in the sand if you're not confronted by the horrors of where much of your food comes from. I think that is, if I may say so, Ruth, being completely pretentious and condescending. Of course we know that sausages and burgers aren't animal-shaped. Does that really need to be pointed out? Alison is in Bury St Edmunds. Hello, Alison.
Hi, Ian. How are you?
Good, thank you. What would you like to say?
Firstly, Happy New Year.
And to you.
And lovely to talk to you. I own and run a vegan cafe. And it's for me, it's not Dinah Def. I think we have this conversation yearly around Veganuary. I think what has happened is, let's say about when I became vegan in 2017, I was pretty much a vegetarian. I watched What the Health, and overnight I thought, right, okay, I get it. And that's where my journey started. There was very little around at that point. So I decided to do something about it and had a food truck on the market and then got the shop, and it's the rest, they say, is history. Now,
Your shop is in Bury St Edmunds, is it?
It is, yeah. Yeah, we're the only vegan shop in Bury St Edmunds, vegan cafe, and it's got a little shop. And,
I'm really interested in this concept because I would expect there to be vegan cafes in Brighton, in East London. I'm not sure I would have expected it in Bury St Edmunds, which is a town I know quite well. How is it? What reaction have you had? And clearly you're still going, so it's been a success.
Yeah, it's been tough, but I would count it as a success. What I would also say, though, is if I was only food-based, so if I was just a cafe with just food, I probably wouldn't have survived past COVID because you need to diversify. So we are a cafe, plus we've got a little shop, which is all vegan products and eco-friendly products, and we've also got some refillables as well. So it all works hand in hand. So that's all the eco side of things and the vegan side of things. And that's how it works. So that's where we've been pretty successful. Now, I suffer from the same thing as everybody in the hospitality industry is suffering from at the moment. Major lack of footfall. People have only got a certain amount of money to spend, and they're being very choosy of where to spend it. But saying that, about 70% of my customers are not vegan. And I think what you have to realise is it's not just vegans who use vegan products. There's a lot of people with dairy allergies, egg allergies, who prefer vegan products because they know they're pretty safe. So we get a lot of people here who are, and on religious grounds as well, you know, so we get, our customers are varied. But this December, like, we did three events, and I did, I do what's called a cook at home menu. So people can, I make the stuff like the mushroom wellingtons and the sausage rolls, and they bake it at home. From last year, we had double the amount of orders, and our events, all three of our events are full. So it's like, it's not dying a death. It's still all there. And the people who, you know, who use it and who are vegan or who like the food still come. But I think what has happened is when there was the big boom that you were talking about, and I think it was around 2017, 2018, that time, the big boys, I call them, Tesco, Sainsbury's, all jumped on the bandwagon, thought, oh, we can make a lot of money out of this, made a load of products, brought it all onto the market, very quickly found out that, yes, there are a lot of us and a lot of people who eat vegan food, but probably not as many as they thought, and then started to scale down. So, and it's lovely. Veganuary for us is lovely because all the supermarkets and everybody, they bring all their stuff out, but then very quickly, some of it goes. And you get used to one product and then they stop it because they've not, you know, it's very not commercialized, but the big boys have made it commercialized, so to speak. People forget about us little independents where, you know, but that is with everything. That is with everything across the board.
See, I think it's fascinating that 70% of your customers are not vegans. Because I was walking past your cafe in Bury St Edmunds,
yeah,
I would probably just not even think about coming in because I wouldn't be interested in having vegan food. But clearly,
a lot of people do that. Yeah.
So do you have a sign outside saying you don't have to be vegan, but it helps?
I have had people say to other customers of mine, well, why'd you go in there? You're not vegan. And they say, well, you don't have to be.
Yeah.
Like one of your callers, your last caller was saying, there's a lot of stuff already out there. Because I get people saying to me, and I can be very, I won't call it sarcastic, it's a milder form than that, but you say, oh, I've never eaten vegan food. And I say, but you eat apples, potatoes, And they go, yeah. And I said, well, that's all vegan. Like your one of your texters said, a lot of breads are vegan. There's some flavours of Pringles are vegan, Skittles are vegan, Oreos are vegan. So McVitie's digestives are now vegan. There's so much stuff out there that is, we call it accidentally vegan, you know, and it's all in the process. Like, a lot of wine isn't vegan because of the process, and it's the filtration, because it's filtered through, you know, animal products. But there's a lot of vegan stuff out there, and it's most spirits are vegan. You know, I won't say the name, but there's a couple of very well-known IPAs and stuff that are vegan, which I use in my batter for my vegan fish and chips. And we have vegan roast dinners. We have a Sunday roast once a month. It works.
Right.
It works.
Free advert. What's the name of your cafe? Have you got a website?
It's Alison's Eatery. And if you're ever in Bow St Edmunds, please come.
I promise I will. I mean, I can't remember the last time. My Auntie Molly used to live in Bury St Edmunds, but she's sadly no longer with us, so I don't have occasion to visit as often as I used to. But
you do now. You've got an invite to come here, and I will ensure that you are, you know, well looked after.
Well, you are very kind. Thank you very much indeed, Alison. Keep your calls coming, 0345 6060973. It's 12:47.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The Prime Minister Keir Starmer promises you'll see positive change this year, and talk of decline and defeat is wrong. What do you want from him? Fire tragedy in a Swiss ski resort. Dozens are dead, scores are injured.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Your Happy New Year could start right here in London. Hannah entered the Omaze Million Pound House draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next. And if you enter by midnight tonight, you could also win a Porsche 911 and £100,000. Nor recently got the keys to her new car.
Oh my God.
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million and the car with the cash, you must enter by midnight tonight at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day, and messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelled my name in tea lights, and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings, next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Because you bought your robot vacuum on your Barclay card, you got 0% interest for up to 24 months, which makes watching it, hypnotically sweeping up your crumbs, even more satisfying. Oh, missed a bit. What you buy is your business. Helping you pay less interest is ours. Barclay card. Make money work for you. Subject to financial status, new customers only. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable, 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on £1,200 credit limit. T's and C's apply.
Ian Dale on LBC.
It's 10 to 1 on LBC. Jez says, great show and happy new year. I have 4 Thai restaurants, and when evaluating the menu for the new year, I've noticed currently that only 1.7% of our total food sales are vegan dishes. This time last year, that was 2.8%. A total vegan bill, where nothing on it contains animal products, is below 1%. However, customers are definitely now using the vegan dishes as complements to the meat dishes to get what they perceive as a healthier selection onto the table. We are expecting a slight rise in vegan sales for the next 2 weeks, but that is likely to drop back to the 1.5 to 2% mark before February. We won't be changing anything substantially in 2026. That is interesting. I did go to a restaurant a couple of months ago where I did choose something from the vegan menu. I think it was a stuffed red pepper I can't remember what it was stuffed with, but obviously not meat. And I felt vaguely superior for having done so. Which is rather pathetic, isn't it? Richard is in Bristol. Hello, Richard.
Good afternoon, Ian, and Happy New Year to you.
And
hope it's been
you.
Good. For me, being plant-based, and I tend to call myself plant-based, pursuing a plant-based diet rather than vegan, because sometimes I wear belts that are old but made of leather and therefore made from an animal product, shoes as well, but as they kind of like deteriorate, I try and convert to non-meat products. But for me, being plant-based is a triple win for the environment, for my health, and for the abuse of animals.
Which of those three is most important to you?
The most important to me was, which helped me make the switch, was environment. Definitely environment, because it's a lower carbon footprint, but also if you look at all the other metrics, like the use of water, the use of land, it makes it much more efficient and better for the planet. And then I thought, yes, I need to have a better diet. But the thing that kind of made me switch again was when I went to a vegan fair and saw through virtual reality, kind of like headset, the inside of an abattoir. And that showed me the abuse and the way that animals are treated in that situation. So for me, you know, everybody wins. I know it's not for everybody. There are some people that have certain dietary requirements, but I found that rather than just saying, right, I'm going vegan today, I did it over a period of about 3 months so that I was able to research what the different types of alternatives were, you know, which plant-based milk was better for me, which marge, etc. And yeah, that's been my journey.
And what do you miss most about your previous diet?
The smell of bacon makes me salivate. it's got better, but cheese, vegan cheese, can be, as I think you said, yeah, can be a bit rank, but it really has improved. And there are some good cheeses out there now. I think it's been a problem that the market has worked on. And, I think that's one of the other things. But I find that the best foods, I know you've talked about ultra-processed foods, the best meals are when they're made from scratch. So curries and stir-fries, salads, etc.
Okay.
That for me is what works.
All right, Richard, thank you very much. Let's go to Dave in Tunbridge. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Ian. Hi there. Right, I've been a vegan for 45 years, and 20 years before that I was a vegetarian. It's a lot easier to be vegan these days. I'm immoral.
You're immoral? I think we lost Dave on a very awkward note there. I think he said, I think he was going to say, I am a moral vegan rather than I am immoral. But he might be. I mean, people from Tunbridge have all sorts of different morals, as I well know. Sheila Fogarty is laughing herself silly here. Sheila, do you have strong views on vegan diets?
No, I don't. I'm immoral too.
Are you?
We're all immoral, aren't we?
Are you going to go religious?
No, I'm just saying we are in one way.
Oh,
but we can talk about mung beans if you want. I have a friend who's vegan, and a very close friend who's vegan, and a very close friend who's vegetarian. And they're both really good cooks, and I've learned a lot from them. I am neither vegetarian nor vegan, but I've incorporated some of how they
eat. Do you ever invite them
around
to dinner and have to cook a vegan meal?
Yeah.
Do you?
But a vegan meal can be like a beautiful curry. It's not. It's just a curry. Curries are great for vegans, I find.
Well, on that note, let's go to Dave in Portsmouth. Hello, Dave.
Good morning, Ian. Nice to talk to you.
Morning.
Happy New Year to you all. One big barometer of vegan growth that hasn't been mentioned is the number of supermarkets, and I can't think of one that doesn't have its own plant-based range of foods. They're often processed foods, pre-made packaged sausages, various things like that. Obviously, all the fruit and veg are vegan anyway. But the fact that they're on every supermarket shelf and tending to
Not on many shelves, though. I mean, in my local Waitrose, the last time I was there, there was about a metre and a half and then sort of five shelves down. So a very small part of the store.
5 years ago, you wouldn't have had that, probably. It's on the growth, you know. we can't really deny that one. But, you know, I'm staunchly vegan, as you can no doubt tell. And I think a lot of the time, what is happening is people are seeking to justify their own habits and the fact that they don't want to face up to the fact that there is the cruelty involved, there is the danger to their own health, the environmental issues. And then also the issue of starvation around the world through the waste of resources on a non-vegan, non-plant-based diet. That's where I'd stand on that one. But very sweet of Sheila Fogarty to mention her vegan friend, because I think everybody knows a vegan now. It's kind of almost like a fashion
accessory.
They're
coming out of the closet.
Well, we are, yeah. Some have been coming out for a long time. In fact, we've even got our own vegan running club. We are that
a
much
vegan
out of the
running
closet.
Club?
Vegan
really?
Running club, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Go and look at it, yeah.
What, you can't kill a pig en route?
Sheila, honestly.
Oh, Sheila, that was harsh, wasn't
it?
Yeah.
What is it? I'm curious what a vegan running club
you've
is.
You've just lost the room.
Well, no, but what is a vegan running club?
Well, a running club for vegans.
It's a running club set
up
for the animals and for all the members of whom are vegan.
So if I turned up to go for a run with you in this vegan running club, you'd ban me, wouldn't you, because I'm not a vegan? How discriminatory is that?
Well, we might use the opportunity to talk to you about
it. I bet
perhaps.
You would.
I mean, all of it stems from education. You know, if people knew, I know you've already mentioned the fact that Paul McCartney's famous quote, you know, if people knew what was going on inside a slaughterhouse, they wouldn't be vegan. And one of your callers already said that he wore a pair of those 3D vision goggles showing you what's happening on the inside of a slaughterhouse, and that's turned him. And it does with many people. And really, honestly, Ian, the cruelty and the brutality that is inflicted on animals through their rearing, through their transportation, through their slaughter, is just kept away from people. And I know earlier in the conversation it was said, well, we know where sausages come from. No, people don't. People kid themselves that all animals are frolicking around in a little meadow and giving birth to little creatures and, you know, we even have the lamb eaters.
If there was no lamb or beef eaten, we wouldn't have sheep and cows frolicking around in our meadows, would we? On that controversial bombshell, David, thank you very much indeed for your call. Well, thanks for all of your calls and messages today. Back tomorrow from 10 for my final day sitting in for James O'Brien. Many of you will be very relieved by that news. Now, coming up at 4 on LBC, Simon Marks is yet again in for Tom Swarbrick. But first, in for herself, it's Sheila Fogarty.
In for myself, as ever. Thanks very much, Ian. At 3 today, I want to talk about this. More than half of UK adults are in favour of using AI, artificial intelligence, to create new music from musicians who have died. So think John Lennon, Elvis Presley, Freddie Mercury and so on. I'm dead against this. How do you feel about it? A 2, digital ID for your baby from day one. Is it as scary as opponents suggest? Going to start, though, with the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, promising you will see positive change this year and that talk of decline and defeat is plain wrong. So, if he's right about that, what do you want from him? What do you want to see? We'll also bring you regular updates on that dreadful tragedy, the fire in a Swiss ski resort. Dozens are dead, scores are injured. We'll have updates.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. Swiss police say several dozen people are presumed dead after a fire in a bar at a popular ski resort. Authorities in Crans-Montana say more than 100 were also injured as they celebrated the start of the new year. Here's the president of the state council, Matthias Renard.
Over 100 casualties, severe injuries who have been taken to hospitals in the Valais region and other hospitals. Intensive care and the operating theatre at the Hospital of the Valais are currently full. Some of the injured persons have been transferred to other university hospitals around Switzerland.
The Foreign Office says it's ready to support any British nationals abroad and will continue to monitor the situation. Party leaders have been delivering their messages for the new year. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer says he wants to defeat decline and division in 2026. Tory leader Kemi Badenoch shared words of optimism, saying we shouldn't lose hope. Weather warnings for snow have been upgraded in northern Scotland. Less severe warnings for snow and ice cover parts of the same area, plus Northern Ireland, most of Wales and most of England. Cold weather alerts are also in effect because of the freezing temperatures. Many households will see their energy bills rise from today. The price cap is going up by 0.2%. It means an average monthly bill in England, Wales and Scotland will go up by 28p. Zoran Mamdani has been sworn in as the New York City mayor. The Democrat is the first Muslim leader of America's biggest city. The ceremony was administered by the city's attorney general, Letitia James.
The mayor of the city of New York.
The mayor of the city of New York.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Mayor.
And health visitors will be able to offer vaccinations to children from struggling families across parts of England. The £2 million government pilot aims to improve immunisation rates. Not one childhood vaccine in England met the 95% target in 2024. LBC weather, a chilly New Year's Day with snow and ice in northern parts, dry and sunny elsewhere with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Emily Lang.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you and a happy new year to you as well. I hope you didn't stay up too late because we need to talk. We need to talk. There's lots to talk about. As much as the Prime Minister's message, New Year's message, which is what I'm going to start with, we are going to have updates throughout the programme as well on this dreadful tragedy. It would be a tragedy any day of any year, but for New Year's morning to produce such a horrible story as this is incredibly sad indeed. The Swiss ski resort where the UK Foreign Office is saying it's monitoring the situation in case there are British people involved. There's no suggestion yet that there is. But at least 40 people are thought to have died in this dreadful fire at the ski resort in Switzerland. So we'll bring you the latest on that throughout the afternoon, any new developments in it as well. But let's start, shall we, with what Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, has said in a short New Year's message to you and me, to everybody in the UK. He promises that change will finally arrive in 2026, that defeat and decline, or talk of defeat and decline, are plain wrong, and he will not let that happen on his watch. First of all, do you believe him? Second of all, what do you want him to deliver? If he says things are going to get better, he's saying that, what will that look like for you? What do you want him to help you with? 0345 6060973. Might be a long list. 84850, the number to text. Here is that New Year message from the Prime Minister in full.
Things have been tough in Britain for a while. For many, life is still harder than it should be. You long for a bit more money in your pockets, a meal out, a holiday, the chance to make a special family moment extra special. In 2026, the choices we've made will mean more people will begin to feel positive change in your bills, your communities, and your health service. But even more people will feel once again a sense of hope, a belief that things can and will get better. Feel that the promise of renewal can become a reality. And my government will make it that reality. More police on the streets by March, energy bills down, and the number of new health hubs up in April. More funding for local communities. And with that change, decline will be reversed. That opportunity for you and pride in your community can be restored. I share the frustration about the pace of change. The challenges we face were decades in the making, and renewal is not an overnight job. But putting our country back on a stable footing will become our strength. Strength that means we can support you with the cost of living. Rail fares, prescription charges, fuel duty, all frozen. £150 cut from your energy bills. A boost once again to the national minimum wage. A major cut to the cost of childcare. We are getting Britain back on track. By staying the course, we will defeat the decline and division offered by others. For all the times that have been tough, I hope the festive period has brought good moments, precious time with your family, a chance to celebrate what's most important to you. I wish you more of those moments next year, when things start to feel easier, when politics shows it can help again, when Britain turns the corner with our future now in our control. The real Britain will shine through more strongly. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Prime Minister, if you and your people are listening. And I hope you're right. I hope you're right, based on the content of what you've just said in that speech. I do think his delivery, he can't help it. It's just the way he speaks and the way he reads out loud. But I think it makes a difference to whether you stay with a speech that he's making or a brief statement that he's making. And I think it's a shame, because I do hope he's right. I'm sure any right-thinking person hopes he's right, because we do want the people struggling most to do better this year. And even those of us not struggling the most want to do better this year and want the country to feel less bleak than it has felt. I wonder what you make of that, what you make of that message, whether it gives you any hope for the year. And if, as he says, things are going to get better and you're going to see that they're getting better, what will that look like to you? 0345 6060 973, the number to call. You can text 84850. Andrew Fisher joins me, columnist at the iPaper, former senior policy advisor for Jeremy Corbyn. He wrote the 2017 and 2019 Labour manifestos. Not entirely on your own, would be my guess, Andrew.
No, they're very much a collective effort. I mean, you're more of an editor than a writer with the manifestos, to be honest.
Oh, are you? Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Well, listen, what did you make of that?
I think it's the right focus, to focus on the cost of living. I think that's what Labour should have done right from the very off when they were first elected, because that was the crisis they inherited from the Tories. You know, so unfortunately, what they did, though, was kind of scupper any goodwill by kind of going after pensioners straight away. You know, he's just said in that little clip you played, you know, life has been harder than it should be. So their solution when they came in was to
make it harder for
fuel payments. Yeah, and then to try and cut money from people on disability benefits, which, as you know, do not give you a king's ransom to live on. You know, most, you're far more likely to be in poverty if you're disabled. If you're on benefits and disabled rather than in work, you know, you're even more likely to be in poverty. So, you know, the priorities have been all wrong. So, look, if they are finally 18 months in going, right, the focus is the cost of living crisis, which is what the electorate told them when they voted for change back in, you know, when was it, July 2024, then great. And that is